Public Well with Crowley.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. All of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We got our good friend Terrence Heath from the Campaign for America's Future talking about his article, To Whom Much Is Given, A Courageous Progressive People's Budget, is what we need. Also, Aaron Gill of the Pennsylvania Health Access Network going to be here talking about the Adult Basic Plan and the setback in court yesterday. And also Jane Lotour. She's written the book Sisters in the Brotherhood. I'm going to talk about the female experience in the workplace, especially the unionized workplace. So it should be an interesting evening. Also, your calls on 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. The big day, I mean, this generally, they bumped tax day off until Monday, but today is generally the big day where they have their Tea Party rallies and the Boston Tea Party rallies and their anti-tax rallies. And I didn't see much of that today. I didn't actually hear much news of it, but I'm sure there was going on. Maybe Monday, I'm hoping. I'm hoping to see people with their hats and their funny costumes and all of that, especially at a time you're talking about who's paying the taxes. And again, I'm of the notion that, yeah, I believe that the working class of this country is taxed enough. But the realities of that, if you go back in our history, you realize that, you know what, the working class has always been taxed pretty heavily, as were the folks above us. And Josh Holland over at Alternate did a nice piece, kind of just dragging together everything I've been talking about for the last several months. He says, the tax day question, who pays what? Points out the fact that someone who makes under $15,000 a year pays a federal income tax of 51% higher than they did 30 years ago. So when Reagan came into power, that tax reform bill of 86 that I keep going back to, that lowered that top marginal rate down, but it also doubled that bottom rate, pushing the poor folks into a higher tax bracket, if you will. But 51% higher today than it was in 1981. If you look at someone who makes $20,000 a year, they're only up slightly from 1981 till today, about $100. So not much, somewhere between $2,500 and $2,600. So $100 there. If you make $50,000, you saw a decline of your tax burden by 19%. And if you made over $100,000, so you made $100,000 a year, you're paying a third less than you did back in 1981. And, you know, we keep hearing people say, well, you know, I want to pay taxes. We were paying much higher rates, which is why we didn't have a massive debt, which is why we were able to invest in things like schools and roads and bridges, which is why we had sports programs for kids in high school and all through school. We had extracurricular activities for people back then because there was tax money coming in. And now let's say you were making $250,000. You're actually making 47% less. You're paying 47% less than you did back in 1981. And if you made $500,000, almost 50% less. So then you get up to that top sphere. You're making $10 million a year, over 50% less. So you ask yourself, where did all debt come from? I've just told you where all the debt came from. We have handed most of the revenue that was coming into the government coffers to the very wealthy. Now, we got a little drip and drab, but understand, our income, the wage structure in this country, the people who go to work every day and punch a clock, their wages have been stagnant for the last 30 years. So your tax burden is about, you're living on a flat line. Now, the very wealthy, the 10 million a year people, they're doing very well and getting away paying less than half of what they used to. So you say, well, corporations must be picking up the slack, right? Corporations must be doing it. Because we've got the highest corporate tax rate in the world, one of the highest. The effective tax rate for the most successful 5% of American companies declined 42%. 42%, while all the other companies just saw a decline of 10%. So the Fortune 500, you know, those big ones at the top, they saw their tax burden slashed 42%. Everybody else, you got a little relief, not much. According to a Congressional Budget Office report, the top 1%, the top 1% of folks in this country paid 5% of their income in state and local taxes, 5%. While those of us in the bottom half, those of us who work for a living, we paid twice that much. So when you hear the Republicans, and they love to say this, I hear it all the time, well, the rich people pay all the taxes. No, they pay the big numbers because they have the big numbers. They've got the money to pay. It's the percentage that I'm talking about. You know, when you start figuring in the gas taxes and the sales taxes and all of the other taxes, the working people of this country are taxed enough already. I'm right there with you. But this visceral, rabid, foaming at the mouth anytime someone mentions raising taxes, at some point has to stop. Clear, rational thinking people have to go, well, raising taxes is okay on people who have it. We should expect something from those who are doing very well. It also found that the people in the bottom 80%, which is the vast majority of us, probably everyone listening to this program, you paid 9% of your income in Social Security taxes, while the folks at the very top, just 1.6%. Which, again, I go back to what I've been saying for the longest time. You want to save Social Security? Take that cap off. Make that top 1% pay 9% of their income into Social Security like you and I do, and we don't have a problem. In fact, Social Security is flush with cash. In fact, we're not talking about cutting Medicare. We're not talking about raising the age to 70. We're talking about, gee, what do we do with all this cash? Maybe we should let people retire earlier. Maybe we should expand Medicare to more people. But, oh, heaven forbid we do that. You might actually thin out the labor pool and have wages rise a little bit. We can't have that. So with today being tax day, I thought it was an interesting moment to go back and look at some of those numbers. And if you want to check it out for yourself, I found this great website, remappingdebate.org. You can put in any year, any number, and it will tell you how much taxes you paid back in 1980 compared to today on any income you want back in the 40s, 50s. It'll go through all that. And I think it's a fabulous site, remappingdebate.org, because this is something that we're not talking about in the public debate. All I hear and all I've been hearing is we need to slash, we need to cut, we need to slash and burn, we need to kick women off of WIC, we need to take food away from children, we need to cut education, we need to cut. And at the end of the day, the failure to invest in tomorrow is going to turn around and bite us right in the keisters. And I'm hoping that the same rational folks call their congressmen, call their senators, and say, you know what? A balanced approach would help. In fact, go to those folks who are doing very well and say, you know, we'd like just a touch. a little bit more, contribute more, maybe you reduce those, find those reductions in the tax code, call it whatever you want. But at the end of the day, I believe in the revenue side. Because if you look, as a percentage of our GDP, we are now taxed at the lowest rate in the last 60 years. And those aren't just some, you know, hippie liberal points. This comes from the government statistics. It's flat, basic numbers. We've taken in this much revenue. This is our GDP. It is, well, just about 14.5%. The lowest in the last 60 years, Jake. And at some point, I hope somebody wakes up and says, you know what? Maybe we do need to raise taxes a little bit.
Well, I think the Obama administration, especially the president, I mean, you have to give him credit what he's done this week, Rick. I think he's framed a discussion coming up next year. In fact, coming up in this budget debate, he's framed it where I think we're putting the Republicans in a corner. Either they raise taxes or they're going to have Medicare or Social Security, which, as I've said numerous times, and I think you agree, is still politically the third rail. And there's some Republicans right now that are a little concerned about that debate.
You know, I look at this, and today was an interesting day in the House. If you watch the vote, which I thought was pretty funny, the Democrats finally woke up and said, all right, we can play like Republicans. They voted present and made the Republicans vote down their own bill. Which I thought was hysterical, because you saw the chaos, because as soon as the Republicans realized they were being had, you had a bunch of them go back and change their vote, and I'm waiting to see which people did, because, you know, they just, hey, this is a Republican bill, let's vote for it. And they voted for it, and all these Democrats voting present, kind of made people go, uh-oh, we don't want that to happen.
Well, it's kind of good to see, Rick. It's about time the Democrats get out in front of the parade. I mean, the Tea Party and the Republicans, especially the Tea Party part of the Republican Party, has been leading the parade ever since they got elected. And it's good to see that the Democrats are finally taking some initiative.
So that's the stuff we're going to talk about today. What are your thoughts? Do we go after a little bit better revenue enhancements, if you will? Do we pursue, as the lady last night, Ms. Paquette, said, the wealthy, the recipient of a nice life because she was a sperm lottery winner? Do we pursue those folks? Your thoughts after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're back with Terrence Heath. He's from the Campaign for America's Future. We want the world.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin's governor admits a new union certification law saves no money. Jesse Russell reports.
On Thursday, the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Oversight and Government Reform held a hearing on state and municipal debt. Tough choices ahead. They called on two governors with diametrically opposed management styles to testify, Governor Pat Shumlin from Vermont and Governor Scott Walker from Wisconsin. Walker received the brunt of the questioning as Democrats on the committee used his appearance as an opportunity to ask Walker about his proposals to limit collective bargaining for public sector employees. Ohio Representative Dennis Kucinich challenged Walker's assertion that the governor's proposals were necessary to balance the budget. Specifically, Kucinich asked Walker to clarify a proposal that requires employees to vote to recertify unions once per year.
How much money does it save, Governor?
That particular part doesn't save any.
Chris Marshall is helping to recall Wisconsin Republican State Senator Alberta Darling with a group that she co-founded called Mequon Moms Against Darling. She and the other upper-income suburban moms in Darling's district working for Darling's recall are disgusted by what they see as union busting that's tearing Wisconsin apart.
The defining factor for us is that it was just disgusting what has happened to the state of Wisconsin, as, you know, pitting neighbors against neighbors, family members against family members, and to somehow make the public sector employees, from school teachers to state employees, the bad guy in all of this, the ones who are causing all of this, the ones who just won't get on the train to fix it. When most of us in my group realized that if we all took, because we're in the upper income of the state, if we all took a 1.8 increase in our taxes, this budget hole would be closed.
Marshall says after the Republican senators are recalled, Governor Scott Walker is next.
This governor is unique in his inability to come into a dialogue, to compromise, to show any kind of diplomacy. And what he's done is torn apart a state, torn apart the very soul of the state. And so for that reason and that reason alone, we need a change.
Workers and their allies are on the march this week around the country. In Michigan, thousands turned out to oppose Governor Rick Snyder's attacks on unions. In Washington State and California today, there will be rallies at state capitals protesting budget cuts that hurt public services while corporate tax breaks stay in place. And in Ohio, AFSCME, SEIU, firefighters, teachers, and the Democratic Party will rally in Columbus to repeal the anti-union law known as SB 5. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
I'll tell you what we're fighting for. The reality is we're fighting for the future of our children. We're fighting for the future of our grandparents. We're fighting for the future of this country that we have built, the country that we love and don't want to see destroyed by people like Paul Ryan, by people like these radical right-wing Republicans who think that this country is here for them to profit from and to fill their coffers. That to me seems to be the only thing conservatives can agree on is a greed factor beyond explanation. And I do agree with our next guest, Terrence Heath. Too much is given. I do believe we should expect something. Terrence, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
The piece that you've written over at ourfuture.org, to whom much is given, a courageous, progressive people's budget. What does that look like?
Well, it looks like the exact opposite of what Ryan, Congressman Ryan presented. It looks like a budget that invests in the American people, in the middle and the working class, invests in direct job creation, front-loaded job creation, balances the budget, and includes real sacrifice. Right now, sacrifice in this country has been a one-way street, and more people, I think, such as myself, are growing amazed that Sarah Palin can, with a straight face, tweet from her Twitter account that shared sacrifice means we all have to share some of the pain. When Republicans, both in Paul Ryan's budget and in the Republican study committee's budget, that Republicans were punked into voting for and then voting against.
Yep, they were for it before they were against it.
This afternoon, are cuts that inflict pain one way. And to whom much is given, much is required, I think, goes two ways. Congressman Hank Johnson, who quoted Luke and at the press conference, the Progressive Caucus press conference, used it to talk about those who have, as Al Sharpton said, have benefited from our system of government, from our way of life, from our society and how it's structured, should and are able to and can afford to give some back. It's that kind of acknowledgement. But also, it's what John Kennedy said when he quoted Luke as he was saying his goodbye to Massachusetts. And what he was saying is that from much is required from our lawmakers, from our legislators, because much is given to them in terms of power, in terms of responsibility, and in terms of our trust, and that they have to have the courage to, like he said, stand up to one's enemies, stand up when necessary to one's associates, the courage to resist public pressures as well as private greed.
Yep, absolutely.
That's what it's about.
the Ryan budget, as I understand it, again, following the same conservative mentality since the late 70s of handouts for the very wealthy, paying for the very bottom. This only continues through this. I don't know why he's calling this the road to prosperity or the path to prosperity or whatever ridiculous name he has for it when all it's doing is the same thing. It's cutting revenue into the federal government. It's slashing programs that help people, and it's making those who have more and those who have not have less.
There are two people that I have heard really describe it better than I think I can. One of those is in Newsweek is Jonathan Chait, who in the title of his column described it as war on the weak, and it really is an Ayn Randian kind of approach to things in which the people who most need help are considered the ones least deserving of it.
Well, I mean, I guess it is their Darwinism taken to the next level. If you
can't
feed yourself, you'll die on the side of the road. And we're not going to follow our so-called Christian values and lend a hand to you.
And that actually brings up the other person that that I thought really just put in more effectively than I can, and that was Reverend Jim Wallace, who went back to the prophet Isaiah and just said, basically, shame on you, woe be unto you, because no good will come to you when you turn your back on, as Christ would have said, the least of these. I was raised Baptist, and I remember that, you know, as you do unto the least of these, so you do unto me. It's an acknowledgement that our fates are connected.
Right.
That if I watch you suffer and don't do something about it, then no one's going to be around when it's my turn and I'm in need of help. But also, what Jim Wallace pointed out is something that Martin Luther King pointed out when he talked about dangerous unselfishness, and it's asking that question in your mind, not what's going to happen to me if I help, or what's going to happen to them if I don't help, but what's going to happen to me if I don't help? What's going to happen to us?
Right.
What kind of country are we going to become? These are the decisions that shape who we are.
Exactly. I mean, even from, and that's a perfect point. It was going to lead to my next question, because even if we're not going to do this on some Christianity, level of Christianity or faith or whatever, on a certain level,
right.
It's about us. I mean, the wealthy in this country cannot survive if you have a peasant class who's going to scale their walls and steal the food off their table to feed their own kids.
It doesn't work. It's unsustainable, and we've seen it throughout history. Back in the Dickensian era, to which people like Paul Ryan want to return, you saw it in London, in the vast gulf of inequality just within that one city. It was around the time of the Jack the Ripper murders, and one of the contexts in which that was happening was that you had amazing wealth living cheek by jowl next to people who were in such desperate poverty that their chief concern was just getting enough money to eat and sleep for the night.
Yep.
And it's unsustainable. They had riots, and the crimes called attention to those problems and started a reform movement. And the other thing that I think comes to mind is something that Maya Angelou said. It is dangerous to keep someone at your feet, because in a snap of a finger, they could be somewhere else that you don't want them to be. And if we can figure out how to live together and to work in a way that recognizes that what happened to one of us in some way, shape, or form, directly or indirectly, affects the rest of us.
Right. So let me ask you this, Terrence Heath. There are a bunch of bills that I've seen that are being put forth. Jan Schakowsky, I think, has a great piece of legislation, the Fairness in Taxation Act.
Yeah.
I think Bernie Sanders, Senator from Vermont, has a great piece of legislation.
Yeah.
Not a snowball's chance in hell of either one of them passing. But
right.
It's where we start the conversation to get people's heads back on the side of what I've been saying from the very beginning is we don't have a spending problem. We've got a massive revenue problem.
Exactly. And it does, to me, in a way, yes, it's true. Those bills don't have much of a chance of passing in this Congress. But there are some fights that are worth having, whether you know you're going to win them or not, because A, it moves you forward. It moves the issue. It moves the message that you're trying to spread and to give to people forward. It offers an alternative, which is what Lynn Woolsey said at the Progressive Caucus press conference, is that this budget is offered as an alternative to the Republican budget, as an alternative to what the president was people thought the president was going to offer, and to just show people there is another way, there is another option, there are other decisions we can make that will get us out of this mess together and stronger across the board. And whether that fight is winnable now, if no one stood up to have it, it would certainly be a lot harder to fight later.
Right. I got to be honest, though. I'm just not seeing, other than a handful of voices, I'm not seeing this frame that I'm pushing out there, which is the reality that we are at the lowest rate of taxation in the last 60 years, the lowest percentage of GDP going to the federal government in 60 years.
Right.
I'm just not seeing that out there.
Last 10 years that have been an anomaly, actually, to even allowing the Bush tax cuts to expire, which is what the people's budget does, is simply returning to what we had before. But I think that what you're seeing is, especially if you look out at what's happening in states like Wisconsin and states where people are pushing back against conservative Republican governors who are now attacking workers, people are looking around and saying, hey, wait a minute, you're attacking my neighbor, you're attacking my kid's teacher, you're attacking my brother or my sister-in-law.
Yeah, but Terrence. It was those greedy teachers and those overpaid state workers, and it was those firemen and those policemen who brought this country to its knees and collapsed the economy and stole half the 401ks and pretty much sent the globe into a massive recession. Don't you remember?
But what's happening is, and it's even something that you're starting to hear now from the president, is that those people that I mentioned before, people like you and me, people who know better, are starting to stand up and fight back. And we spent a lot of time and energy in the past week getting people to write, to contact the White House and other organizations joined in to send a message to the president not to do what it looked like we were hearing he was going to do. And from what I've heard and seen, it sounds like that message got through.
Yep.
And now we've got to wait and see. As Digby wrote in the New Yorker, New York Magazine, he's talk, and is he going to walk the walk? And
right.
As Cenk Uygur said, it's up to us to keep that pressure up.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I said right when he gave his speech, campaign Obama is back. Let's see what actions come out of this. But at the end of the day, you know, I do believe it was all of the pushing from the voices who are not happy with him that got his attention. And I keep hearing people going, well, Rick, you know, he's our guy. We can't beat him up. No.
No.
You beat him up when he's doing the wrong thing, and you praise him when he's doing the right thing.
Exactly. One of the things that the Tea Party gets right and that I hope progressives will figure out is you get results when the party leadership figures out there are consequences, or there may be consequences for ignoring the base. And the Republicans are kind of between a rock and a hard place in some ways because of their base, but their base gets listened to. And we need to be willing to raise the volume. And and keep it up to get our message across, because at the end of the day, it's us who are going to, if the Democrats have any chance of keeping the Senate, of taking back the House, of keeping the White House, it's people like us who are going to be a huge part of that.
Yep, and for me, it's I've been crazy the last couple of weeks. You know, the free trade agreement he wants to pass with South Korea, and then Colombia. You know, I can't be happy with that, and I'm not going to put on the happy face and say, "Oh yeah, okay, whatever you want, President." No.
Right.
That's where you have to stand up and make your voice heard.
And that's what President Obama was doing in his speech was drawing, as Eugene Robinson said, drawing a line in the sand, and that's because we drew a line. We drew a line and said, do not do this if you want our support, if you want to keep us behind you, do not do this.
Yep.
And it got through, and I think that we need to keep that pressure up and do it every single time that there's something like this looming on the horizon. We may not win every single one of those fights, but every single one of them is worth having.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes you're going to take one on the chin, but you're going to get your shots in as well.
Exactly.
That's how it is.
Exactly.
Terrence Heath, ourfuture.org, the website, to whom much is given, a courageous, progressive people's budget. You can get there from our site at thericksmithshow.com. It's a great article. Terrence, great work you guys are doing over there. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. Thank you so much.
Terrence Heath, Campaign for America's Future. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
An email popped up recently that chilled me to the bone. Just one sentence long, it said, "Occasionally Kansas legislators make Texas legislators look like sages." Friends, if that's true, America is in a heap of hurt. For years, I've lived with, dealt with, and reported on the insane asylum that Molly Ivins dubbed the Texas Ledge, goofier than which I thought you could not get. In just the past couple of months, for example, I reported to you that two towering figures in our ledge had been routinely double billing on travel expenses for luxury hotels, fancy restaurants, and such. In the midst of an ongoing budget crunch, they were illegally collecting tens of thousands of dollars from Texas taxpayers, even as they were demanding that programs to help poor people be slashed. When caught, these goobers essentially said, "Well, gosh, no one told us it was wrong." Now that sets a high bar for low IQ, doesn't it? And I thought it would also establish a low mark for bottom feeder ethics. However, my Kansas correspondent found a lawmaker in his legislature who is a legitimate contender to top our duo. Virgil Peck is the name. A state rep, he sits on a committee that was recently considering ways to deal with the spreading wild boar problem. It was suggested that the solution might be to put sharpshooters in helicopters to thin the roving herds. That sparked a synapse between Virgil's two brain cells, and next thing you know, his tongue was moving, and these words gushed out of his mouth. "Looks like to me, if shooting these immigrating feral hogs works, maybe we have found a solution to our illegal immigration problem." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Ooh, boy, that's Texas-class doofusness, all right. Maybe we need to have a national state-ledge worst-off. Send your nominees to me, info@jimhightower.com.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.com.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
All right. think all of those are pretty good descriptions of the GOP. Arrogance, ignorance, greed. Yeah, right there. Right there. Again, you know, how can you come to any other conclusion? I guess I can't. Let's go to the phone lines. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Got Ike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
Hey, Rick. Doing okay, buddy. I appreciate the operation you guys got going on and telling the truth. It's nice to hear, you know, for a long time before I got my smartphone, I just kind of felt like I was a wolf out in the wilderness, you know. I didn't know hardly if anybody was paying attention. Got a quick question for you could probably help me with. I thought that the closed shopper rule was struck down quite a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you, in order to be, you have security clauses. You can't mandate membership, but you can mandate that people pay their fair share of the negotiations. So, like, for instance, I belonged to the Teamsters Union. If I didn't want to be a member, I would still have to pay a small monthly charge for the negotiation and the enforcement of the contract. I wouldn't have to be a member. That's the difference. Now, in right-to-work states, you don't have to do any of that. And that came out of Taft-Hartley. You have the luxury of someone else paying your way, of someone else being responsible for you, and you reaping all the benefits of all those things that others would provide for you. So a good Republican theory, a good Republican way of going about things, have everybody else pay your way.
Right, right. Yeah, I thought I understood it correctly. And yes, I've worked more union in the South than I have the North, and I didn't really pay attention. And it's been years since I've been able to be union, so, but I had to get that cleared up because, you know, down South, you're absolutely correct, and that's one of the ways they've taken revenues away from the unions that are here and weakened them to the point that they have, besides the right to work garbage that they put through, is the idea that if the employee that is not even a union member, I remember because my mother was a business agent, an assistant business agent, we had to represent them anyway, and it was at no charge to them. The membership picked up the tab.
Yeah, and it's the same thing they want to do with health care. They want health care for everyone. They just don't want to pay for it.
Right. Well, my sister, who's been a teacher as long as I can remember, who spent 12 years forever in college. She went to three different colleges to earn her degree. She, unfortunately, is living in Florida, but fortunately, she's listening to you online. And, you know, I always tell folks, you know, anytime I get a chance about your show, because, you know, it's not very many places where you can get accurate information. And also, you know, pay some real dues or some respect to the working men and women in this country. For the life of me, I've never been able to understand these Nimrods out there that don't understand the value of not only other people's labor, but their own in a lot of cases. You know, in the South, these people, it seems to me, they just hate themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten to the point, and I appreciate you promoting the program. We use all of that. Word of mouth is always the best. But, you know, I look at some folks who are the ones who are the most vehemently anti-union, and you say, well, how much are you worth? How much is your time worth? How much would it cost for you to do this job? And I find that folks who aren't supporters of collective bargaining and the right to organize are generally people who don't have a very high view of themselves and their self-worth.
Well, and, you know, there's the sad part about the bigger part of that that I always bring up to them. I said, did you know, for example, last year, I think it was like somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 35,000 people were killed on the roads. I said, you want to guess how many of those folks were either on their way to work or on their way back from work?
Yep.
You put your life on the line every day just to show up, and they treat you like, well, you know, we don't have to account for anything that it takes out of your time or your expense to get here. And, you know, we want you to kiss our, well, you pick the part,
yep.
you know, all day long and be grateful you got a job when they don't appreciate. They just don't appreciate whether you spend time preparing, particularly my sisters and the teachers. You know, they spend so much time, their own time.
And their own money.
Cases, you know, and yeah, school supplies. I mean, let me tell you, my sister would do anything for her kids. Even after all these years, you know, and as fed up with the system and everything and all the garbage that's gone on and the way she's been denigrated, she's still devoted. The same way that I'm still devoted as a construction painter, even though you can't walk out on a construction site now and speak English to anybody and expect them to understand you. You know, I mean, look, bro, here's the deal. These people have got to get it through their thick skulls. And I've got proposals that'll take care of it. One-tenth of one penny on every investment that goes through Wall Street every day.
Yep.
Okay, you have a million and some odd whatever trades, one-tenth of one penny added on and take it to the Treasury. That's a good place to start.
And you make it, and you make it just for the trades that happen during a day. Because most trades are seconds. People hold a stock for a mere fraction of a second before the computer sells it again. You've got these supercomputers that are selling hundreds of thousands, if not millions of stocks per second.
Mm-hmm.
There's no investing going on. That's all gambling. That's all, it's all mathematical equations to suck money out of where? Out of the pension funds and out of the working people's, those crappy 401ks.
Right on. And you know what? For the life of me, I cannot see how people cannot see correlation in history to 1928, to 1936, to FDR, to the whole fight that's already gone on in this country. I can't see how they are so damn blind other than, and I'll indict the schools for this, they do not teach Union history. That's the last damn thing they want to teach any kid about is what the unions are and the rights that you have. They don't do it in civics or any other place. And you know, I'll give them a black mark for that one, and I'll give them another mark for Black History. By the way, I want to mention this real quick too. It's A. Philip Randolph's birthday today.
Yes.
I just want to point that out.
Absolutely. Here's the thing with that. It's not the teachers who decide that, and teachers get beat up an awful lot for curriculum and what goes on in the classroom.
That's what my sister complains about all the time. She has no control in
no
her
control.
Classroom.
It all comes from the school boards who are mostly Republicans because they're small business people in the area who all they care about is cutting taxes and not having to pay for education. That's what
Can
it's
I
about.
Can I give you some good news from Wisconsin?
Hit me.
Yeah, the recount that was done in that race that the magical vote showed up,
yep.
the Supreme Court.
It's within the free margin.
Underneath the recount limit.
Yep.
She gets a free recount.
Yep, it's within the free limit. And that is good news.
And they found an election irregularity underneath that woman's watch back in 2006 when they ran for attorney general. There's a discrepancy of over 17,000 votes they don't have the ballots for.
Uh-oh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well,
she could go to jail, baby.
And I hope she does.
Yes, sir. Hey, listen, I appreciate y'all's time, man. Thanks
I appreciate
so much.
It. Thanks for the call. Call anytime.
Yes, sir.
You know, the reality is you look at it, that thing in Wisconsin's really got me all up in arms. How do you go home? I just took my computer home and I found 14,000 votes.
But isn't it amazing that after the story broke and we were kind of celebrating about this huge upset, and that went on for hours and hours, and all of a sudden, boom, out of the clear blue sky. Just makes you wonder why she hadn't discovered that earlier. Just a thought.
and a thought that makes you go, did she fiddle with something, or is she just incompetent?
And if she got away, this is just theoretical. If she got away with it before, she figured, well, she's only going to do it again unless she has to. Well, that's just another thought.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. It's just nuts. I mean, all the news that you're going on around here. And the big news today was Obama. They found, an open mic, and they heard Obama say something that was just completely out of context and just completely off the wall. You know, like the Republicans want to repeal health care. They want to destroy his major accomplishment, and they're going to try and nickel and dime him to death in the budget in order to do it. And he goes, what, do you think I'm stupid? And that is a big revelation. Oh, my goodness. That is big, giant news, and this... You know, this guy, this Mark Knoller, CBS correspondent, I'm sure he's getting all these pats on the backs and the high fives for what is common sense. Look, the people who brought us this budget mess are the Republicans. The fact that, and I think Obama said it right. He said it absolutely right. Paul Ryan brought you what? He brought you the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. He voted for it. He voted for the Bush handouts. He voted for all of that stuff. Pretty much what I've been saying from the very beginning in all of this. So this grand roadmap that he's got to get us back, he voted for the prescription drug bill. which I loved. I got to be honest. He was talking on the floor today as we were watching C-SPAN. He was talking about, you know, when we have the ability to negotiate for drugs, it'll be much lower. And I'm going, hold on. Didn't you vote for that crummy Bush bill that said explicitly the U.S. government cannot negotiate for prices? We have to pay full retail because we're Americans. That's what we do. We pay for retail when it's the government. You know, this idea that somehow we believe in the competition of the free market, except in drugs for old people, except for that. And I like what Paul Krugman said about Ryan's grand plan. Said it's a fraud, which is exactly what it is. It's an absolute fraud. And this idea that we're going to phase out Medicare and slash down Medicaid by giving these grand block grants to the states is even more dangerous than what Ryan wants to do with Medicare, which is give granny a voucher. My grandmother has had several surgeries. She's 82 years old. She's not in good health. I would be amazed if she has 5 more years. And I'm hoping and praying every day that she does. But look, she's 82 years old. She's led a hard, a working class life. Where is she going to go? Where is she going to go with her little voucher? Because you know you got to have the voucher. Where's she going to go with this voucher to have a for-profit insurance company say, okay, we're going to take you on? And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this, because this is just eating at me, this ignorance and this insanity that the right seems to believe in this mythical free market that is so compassionate and caring about the old, the sick, and the poor. Ain't there, folks. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Look at the fact of the matter is you got all these people who were angry taking to the streets because, oh, the Tea Party's going to save us. And all of these 50-some-year-old people rushing out in the streets because they're angry. They're angry at government. But they love Social Security and they love Medicare. And then, you know, keep your hands off my Medicare, government. Even though it is a government-run program. You look at today, the House Republicans voted for their path to prosperity, which means it means phasing out Medicare and it means slashing Medicaid. The vote pretty much party lines 235 to 193. You had four Republicans who voted with the Democrats on this this path to prosperity, which basically means we're gonna steal from Granny and we're gonna let those poor people die. And hey, you starving kids, get used to that feeling in your stomach. It's gonna be a while. And I guess the question is where's Granny gonna go with her health care voucher? Where's she gonna go with her lottery ticket? I'm guessing it's going to be the same place that the school kids are going to go with their education lottery ticket. Nowhere. Because look at the reality in this. And I hate when it drives me nuts when people say, oh, the government doesn't belong in health care. Folks, the government pays for, our government pays for a majority of health. We insure the old, the sick, and the poor, which, like it or not, is a good number of us. We have taken all of the risk out of insurance. We, the taxpayers, have taken all the risk. And I love these people who say, Jake, you know, we know what's going to happen. We're going to have competition. You're going to have doctors competing. That's what I want. I want two doctors figuring out how to cut corners and do things faster with my health. That's what I want. I want them to rush through tests so they can get to the next patient. I want that sped up production line. And, you know, at the end of this, we take grannies out of the equation. There's no way a couple thousand dollars is going to help granny get insurance in the private market. Not going to happen. We insure all the poor kids. We insure all the sick people. The reality is the insurance industry doesn't really want that. They don't. They're happy the way things are. They're able to profit off of the healthy people. Show me an industry where all the risk is taken out of it. Show me a business opportunity where I have no risk. All I can do is pick and choose the healthy people for me to profit from. I mean, it's remarkable. And we've got people who are just not getting it. And I love this argument that, well, if we let the doctors compete, costs will come down. Really? Have you ever heard of collusion? Do you drive up and down the street and see gas prices much cheaper in one place? No, they're within pennies. That's what healthcare is going to be. And either you're going to be able to afford it or you're not. And for most of us, it's you're not. Now, do I believe there are some things we can do to make the system better? Absolutely. And I think we're working towards that. And I wish the Republicans, Jake, would have come in and said, these are the things we want to make better, instead of saying, let's completely destroy the system.
And I think you're absolutely right. And I do believe, especially with Obama, I believe the Obama administration would have been more than willing if you cover everyone, and at the end of the day, there's a reasonable price. And I do believe under those conditions, and you have a medium, such as the public option, that would ensure that you're going to have competition at a reasonable price. I do believe at that point the Obama administration would have been willing to accept. In fact, even though we got a mediocre bill, the Obama administration has been willing, after the fact, to accept some compromises because they realize, look, you know, some of the Republican ideas do work. This isn't about Republican or Democrat. This is about coming up with the best possible health care for America under the conditions that we were given right now.
In fact, the president just today signed the first rollback of part of his health care bill. The unpopular part of it I thought was dumb. This idea that every business owner is going to have to put out a 1099 for everything over $600, which to me was just an absolute nightmare paperwork.
It was onerous.
But on the other side, you can understand why they tried to do it, because you're making sure that all of the revenue is being reported. Because to be honest, most small businesses, they're not so good at record keeping.
Well, there's one part where the conservative Republicans and the Tea Party are right. There's, you know, the government sometimes goes crazy with the paperwork, and it doesn't make sense. And this is one area where it didn't.
And they did away with it. And that's the way things are supposed to work. But at the end of this, you know, I'm I'm a firm believer, and I don't care if it's a private plan. I don't care if it's a public plan. I think it has to do a couple of things. And we're going to have this discussion again because the healthcare thing isn't done yet. I'm a firm believer in access from cradle to grave. So you have to, someone has to insure you from cradle to grave. This idea that we're employer-based and every time we change employers, we have to find another healthcare company. And then we have this plan at the end of the road to where if we just keep pushing people off, they'll end up on somebody else's doorstep. That has to end. That's part of the problem here. You know, I was talking to a guy who had diabetes. And he says, you know, I'm at the beginning of this journey. And I'm being met at every turn with obstacles and obstruction. The testing strips are expensive. The stuff is just expensive. I can't afford it. Because this insurance company knows if they put those roadblocks up, eventually he's not going to be able to work. He'll lose his private health insurance. He'll end up on Social Security disability on the back of the taxpayer. Paul Krugman, in his book, The Conscience of a Liberal, pointed out something that is just eye-popping, that 95% of all amputations due to diabetes are paid for by Medicare. 95%. So that what that's telling me is we've got an insurance industry in this country who's pushing that down the road. That's somebody else's problem. Let them deal with it. And that's the problem with the for-profit model that we're assuming now. Now, if you go to a system where, when you're born, you will have this for-profit company until the day you die, and their incentive is to keep you well, not profit from you getting sick. That's how you bring costs down. And we haven't begun to have that conversation yet. And I wouldn't be against having a private corporation do it. I prefer it to be something in the public sphere where we have a say in it. But if it were private, it still would have to, it'd have to give you, checkups and all that other stuff. It'd make you see the doctor and, but be cradle to grave and cover your costs. Be accessible, affordable, and portable. But also, start to finish. And the incentive would be keeping you well, not hoping for cancer.
Well, here's another thing that a lot of people don't talk about. If the insurance companies do exactly what you just said, Rick, instead of worrying about short-term profit, they try to get you well. In the long run, what they'd be doing is preserving the present system and ensuring their existence, in other words, enlightened self-interest. If there wouldn't have been any reform eventually, the American people would have demanded reform, and at that point, the possibility of them surviving becomes less and less and less. So it's for them to do the right thing long-term, Rick, it's enlightened self-interest.
Yeah. So here's the thing. You got here in the state of Pennsylvania, you had this thing called Adult Basic. Where the governor had basically kicked 42,000 people off of this very limited, very minor healthcare plan that helps low-income working people. Understand that low-income working people. These weren't the welfare queens that the right loves to point out. These are people who go to work and bust their behind, and they need some help. Now, granted, there are hundreds of thousands of people who would love to get on it, but these 42,000 were kicked to the curb. This is the kind of stuff that I would want to do away with. And have one plan that fits and that covers everybody. And we wouldn't have to have these discussions. But when we come back, we're going to talk with Erin Gill. She's from the Pennsylvania Health Access Network about the decision yesterday and where we go from there. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin's governor admits a new union certification law saves no money.
Jesse Russell reports.
On Thursday, the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Oversight and Government Reform held a hearing on state and municipal debt, tough choices ahead. They called on two governors with diametrically opposed management styles to testify, Governor Pat Shumlin from Vermont and Governor Scott Walker from Wisconsin. Walker received the brunt of the questioning as Democrats on the committee used his appearance as an opportunity to ask Walker about his proposals to limit collective bargaining for public sector employees. Ohio Representative Dennis Kucinich challenged Walker's assertion that the governor's proposals were necessary to balance the budget. Specifically, Kucinich asked Walker to clarify a proposal that requires employees to vote to recertify unions once per year.
How much money does it save, Governor?
Just that particular part doesn't save any.
Chris Marshall is helping to recall Wisconsin Republican State Senator Alberta Darling with a group that she co-founded called Mequon Moms Against Darling. She and the other upper-income suburban moms in Darling's district who are working for Darling's recall are disgusted by what they see as union busting that's tearing Wisconsin apart.
The defining factor for us is that it was just disgusting what has happened to the state of Wisconsin, as, you know, pitting neighbors against neighbors, family members against family members, and to somehow make the public sector employees, from school teachers to state employees, the bad guy in all of this, the ones who are causing all of this, the ones who just won't get on the train to fix it. When most of us in my group realized that if we all took, because we're in the upper income of the state, if we all took a 1.8 increase in our taxes, this budget hole would be closed.
Marshall says after the Republican senators are recalled, Governor Scott Walker is next.
This governor is unique in his inability to come into a dialogue, to compromise, to show any kind of diplomacy. And what he's done is torn apart a state, torn apart the very soul of the state. And so for that reason and that reason alone, we need a change.
Workers and their allies are on the march this week around the country. In Michigan, thousands turned out to oppose Governor Rick Snyder's attacks on unions. In Washington State and California today, there will be rallies at state capitals protesting budget cuts that hurt public services while corporate tax breaks stay in place. And in Ohio, AFSCME, SEIU, firefighters, teachers, and the Democratic Party will rally in Columbus to repeal the anti-union law known as SB 5. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
And I know that somewhere down inside they're just feeling small and scared. And they need to know that someone out there cares. Have you heard the Republicans today? Have you tried to spread your love?
Maybe that would make them a little more compassionate. Maybe it'd make them, care about those family values they keep throwing up in our face every time we turn around. Maybe, just a thought. Anyway, yesterday, a big decision in the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court that rejected a preliminary request to freeze the tobacco settlement money that would have funded the adult basic plan. This seems to be really across the country. You've got governors like in Wisconsin and in Ohio and others in Michigan who are saying, you know what? The heck with those poor working people. The heck with them. Let them get their own insurance. Let the private for-profit market take care of them, even though they can't afford it. That's why I've asked Erin Gill. She's with the Pennsylvania Health Access Network to come talk to us about our adult basic and what's going on here in Pennsylvania. Erin, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
First, explain for those who may not know, and I can't imagine there's anyone out there that doesn't, what adult basic was.
Well, adult basic was a state-subsidized affordable option for working people. It offered folks that were right around working a minimum wage job, maybe making $8 or $10 an hour, working part-time or self-employed, worked at jobs that didn't offer insurance. And adult basic gave them the chance to have, you know, decent, basic, affordable health care and health insurance. It was $36 a month you know, had additional co-pays and things like that. But it really was a lifeline for thousands of families across the state.
Yeah, I saw that when the governor decided he was going to steal that away from them. 42,000 people kicked off the rolls, and I understood there were some 400,000 waiting to get on the adult basic. So we have a major, major problem with working people who, you know, these are, like, as you pointed out, low-income working people who are now without a net.
Oh, yeah, it's a really scary situation, and the need is enormous. You know, the waiting list, like you said, was over 400,000 when the program shut down. Something like, I think almost half of Pennsylvania's unemployed workers were on the adult basic waiting list. So, you know, this is definitely not the time to be, you know, going out of your way to take, you know, vital health care programs away from people, especially when there's such a huge need.
So let's talk about this court decision on Thursday. What does this mean for you guys going forward?
Well, obviously we were disappointed with the ruling. We wish it would have been different, but we are definitely going to keep fighting and pushing legislators to reject Corbett's plan and his raid of the tobacco fund. There's a piece in here that I'm sure you know about, which is that he's taking $220 million from the tobacco endowment fund and using it to start a new lending program for business. So that in particular, I think, is really outrageous. You know, his claim all along is that there's no money for adult basic, and there was. I mean, the tobacco settlement fund provided a dedicated source of revenue for adult basic. The $220 million that he can start this new business, state-subsidized business loan fund, could have kept adult basic going for another 2 years, the current enrollment. So we're definitely going to keep fighting. You know, the court case is not over. The injunction was rejected. So that would have, if it was successful, would have frozen the tobacco payment and kept it, you know, in escrow or whatever the term is.
Right. So
until the challenge was.
Explain to me what the tobacco money, the settlement was to be used for. Because as I understand it, Jack Wagner said it's supposed to be used to pay for health care costs, not to hand out as business subsidies.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was the Act 77, which was the Tobacco Settlement Act that was passed actually by a bipartisan majority back in 2001. And it specifically puts into law how the how Pennsylvania's share of the tobacco settlement that 48 other states, I think, participated in and, you know, were successful. So Pennsylvania gets around $370 million a year from this tobacco settlement. And Act 77 lays out the requirements for how the money should be spent. 92% was used for current health programs. 30% was specifically supposed to go toward adult health. And in previous years, it's been shared between adult basic and medical assistance for workers with disabilities. But then the rest of the money was used for health research, home and community-based care for the elderly, tobacco prevention programs. A small part of it was used to reimburse hospitals for uncompensated care. But all, you know, all of the money, you know, went and was supposed to go toward health programs.
And
that's actually the current, you know, that's the current law that's on the books right now.
And they haven't, the legislature hasn't changed this. It's just he decided by edict he's going to steal this money and move it somewhere else.
Yep, pretty much. And that's what we're calling. I mean, they need to, you know, if they're going to raid, you know, completely raid this fund, especially take, you know, such a huge sum, you know, enough to keep it all basic going for 2 years and use it to start a new program for business, they ought to go on record and officially repeal Act 77 and say, we are officially shutting down adult basic because, you know, health care for working people is not a priority for us. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the lawsuit, but we're definitely pushing folks to, call and contact Corbett, and especially their legislators, their state senator, representative. You know, this is a piece of the budget, so, you know, nothing in Pennsylvania looks very good right now, but we're fighting to make sure that this, you know, planned diversion of the tobacco funds away from their original intent, you know, gets fixed or amended in the budget process.
Right. Let me ask you this. The adult basic plan itself, it had to be started by some hippie liberal, right?
Oh, yeah. No, a hippie liberal named Tom Ridge. So that's the other thing that I think really shows how far off the rails we've gone is, you know, a bipartisan majority and a Republican governor saw the value in improving the health of all Pennsylvanians and in putting in place, you know, some sort of, you know, level playing field for working people to be able to afford insurance. So this is, you know, this was not, you know, some, you know, lefty Lefty Plot, and it, you know, it's been a really successful and important program, and it had, you know, in previous years, tons of bipartisan support. So it's really a surprise, the response that we've not gotten, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at this, though, I got to be honest. This to me seems like a Republican idea. This is business friendly. You know, we keep hearing this frame that we need to be a bit more business friendly state. What could be more business friendly than paying the business costs of health insurance for their employees?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so many of the people on Adult Basic actually were small business owners. There was a woman here in Pittsburgh who owns a small pet care business, and, you know, she lost her coverage. Having Adult Basic allowed her to get, hip transfusion that's needed, and now, you know, she has pretty serious health problems, and she might be forced to give up her business, you know, and potentially try to seek out Medicaid or some other options if her health deteriorates. So, I mean, it just makes no economic sense at all.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, this is one of the arguments that I've made. Look, at the end of this, this very small amount of tobacco settlement money that would go to this and some other funds could insure these folks to keep them healthy. Now, as you've pointed out with this woman, she could end up losing her business, could end up on Social Security disability, on Medicaid, on the backs of the taxpayers, costing us much, much more down the line. Doesn't it make sense to try and, again, going back to that Benjamin Franklin guy and his idea of an ounce of prevention being worth a pound of cure, doesn't that kind of make some sense, even
to
a Republican?
Yeah, you would think. I mean, it makes all kinds of sense. You know, when you allow folks to, you know, have the opportunity to maintain their health and to, you know, check out problems before they become very serious. You know, the cost when someone is to show up in the emergency room are 10 to 12 times higher than if they're able to access decent preventive care and keep themselves healthy. So, you know, an Adult Basic only cost $4,800 to insure one person for the whole year. So it was a very good, you know, economically working program. It was a great model, and it allowed a lot of folks to, you know, maintain their health, maintain their livelihoods. And now these folks are forced to make really bad, you know, really bad choices. Do I quit working and try to, you know, qualify for Medicaid? Do I not spend money on absolutely anything else because all my income is now going to health care and, you know, out-of-pocket costs? So it's a really bad situation.
So beside drop dead, what did our Governor Tom Corporate suggest instead of Adult Basic? What was his solution to Adult Basic? Where did he take it?
Oh, his solution, not surprisingly, was to push people onto private insurance product offered by the Blues called Special Care. And so the Blue Cross insurance plan, it costs 400 times what Adult Basic did, and the benefits are extremely limited. You only get 4 doctor's visits a year for any reason. 21 days in the hospital for any reason, no prescription drug coverage. Adult Basic didn't have that either, but some certain treatments were, you know, could be covered if your doctor would work with you. But this new special care insurance is almost worse than having no insurance, because it's like a false sense of security, and it's 400% more expensive.
Well, that sounds brilliant to me. You're going to give you a doctor appointment, but you're not going to be able to pay for the prescription drugs. What was the point? I guess it was the point of going in the first place.
Right. Yeah.
Yes, Miss Gill, you have pneumonia, and we could clear that up with, you know, with an antibiotic. But sorry, you don't have prescription drugs, and you can't afford the $200 for the prescription or whatever it is.
Absolutely. Brilliant. And it you know, it doesn't include anything related to, you know, diabetes. You know, so for someone with a serious health condition or, God forbid, cancer, I mean, it's absolutely useless.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Aaron Gill, Pennsylvania Health Access Network. What would you have him do? I mean, if you were sitting in the seat, what decision do you make, especially given the current budget crunch that we're in?
I would say adhere to the current law, you know, adhere to Act 77, continue to put 30% toward Adult Basic and medical assistance for workers with disabilities. And I would say get tough on the Blues and make them fulfill their, you know, legal charitable obligations as nonprofits, or, you know, say maybe we should reassess whether or not you guys are actually acting like nonprofits. I think, you know, 30% of the tobacco funds, coupled with, you know, even, you know, potentially smaller amounts than they were contributing from the Blues, could keep Adult Basic going until 2014, which is really the benchmark that we're looking at. That's when a lot of the federal health care reforms and new coverage options come into effect. If those are even around in Pennsylvania, with how hard Corbett and opponents in the legislature are trying to roll that back. So, you know, there is funding. You know, I would say keep the current funding from the tobacco fund. Get tough on the blues. Make sure that they're doing their part. You know, certainly working people in Pennsylvania have been hit, and we continue to pay our fair share and do the right thing, and I think the blues should as well.
Last question, where would someone go if they want to get involved? What would you have them do?
They should definitely go to our website, and it's pahealthaccess.org, and we have all kinds of information up there. We have online petitions, places to call the governor, and we have four organizers in the state. We have all of our phone numbers and emails, so I would definitely encourage you, you know, sign the online petition, make the call to the governor's office, call and meet with your state representative and senator, and get in touch with us, because we're going to be organizing lots of public education events, rallies, actions, lobby trips, all that stuff.
And that's good stuff. Again, you can find that over at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Aaron's name. It'll take you to their website over at PA Health Access Network. Aaron, thanks for the information. Keep up the fight and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
An email popped up recently that chilled me to the bone. Just one sentence long, it said, "Occasionally Kansas legislators make Texas legislators look like sages." Friends, if that's true, America is in a heap of hurt. For years, I've lived with, dealt with, and reported on the insane asylum that Molly Ivins dubbed the Texas Ledge, goofier than which I thought you could not get. In just the past couple of months, for example, I reported to you that two towering figures in our edge had been routinely double billing on travel expenses for luxury hotels, fancy restaurants, and such. In the midst of an ongoing budget crunch, they were illegally collecting tens of thousands of dollars from Texas taxpayers, even as they were demanding that programs to help poor people be slashed. When caught, these goobers essentially said, "Well, gosh, no one told us it was wrong." Now that sets a high bar for low IQ, doesn't it? And I thought it would also establish a low mark for bottom feeder ethics. However, my Kansas correspondent found a lawmaker in his legislature who is a legitimate contender to top our duo. Virgil Peck is the name. A state rep, he sits on a committee that was recently considering ways to deal with the spreading wild boar problem. It was suggested that the solution might be to put sharpshooters in helicopters to thin the roving herds. That sparked a synapse between Virgil's two brain cells, and next thing you know, his tongue was moving, and these words gushed out of his mouth. "Looks like to me, if shooting these immigrating feral hogs works, maybe we have found a solution to our illegal immigration problem." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Ooh, boy, that's Texas-class doofusness, all right. Maybe we need to have a national state-ledge worst-off. Send your nominees to me. info@jimhightower.com.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.com.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
To the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's find out what's on the top stories of the AP today, shall we? One of the top stories the AP reported. Evidently, Miley Cyrus says her family's just fine. Miley Cyrus says she feels more at ease heading out on the international tour right now, that things are fine on the home front. Turns out her parents, Billy Ray and Tish, they were having a little problem, a little marital spat, if you will. And her father was a little critical of her behavior. That's generally what happens when fathers look at their daughters and they're all tarted up. But, you know, hey, that's between them. But evidently they've called off the little family spat and they're all better. And I guess my question is do you really give a damn? And the answer is no. But that was one of AP's top stories today. Which leads me to exactly why we're in the situation we're in this country, when Miley Cyrus is on the front of the AP stories, breaking stories list. To me, it's just mind-boggling. When I think one of the big stories should have been the fact that, again, a French newspaper, Agency France Presse, reported today that several major U.S. banks, yeah, we talked about this yesterday, several major U.S. banks are now close to an agreement with Wall Street regulators to settle fraud allegations. They had all these toxic mortgages. They did all this behind-the-scenes colluding and, as the one report said, set up a cartel. You got the SEC saying, well, let's make a deal. And you got the people, with the big banks going, well, how much? All right. You caught us. We'll write a check. I got to be honest. I wish every time I got caught doing something, I could just say, all right. Yeah, I made a mistake. Sorry. I robbed that bank. Yeah, I'm sorry. Here's a couple pennies on the dollar. Which is all we're going to end up getting anyway, fractions of a penny on the dollar of what these criminals stole and how much it's going to cost us over the next 20 years in lost opportunities. But again, the big news, Miley Cyrus, oh boy, never mind that these criminals got away with the biggest heist in the history of the country. Never mind that. No, don't care. Don't care. The Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission has reviewed millions of pages of documents, interviewed around 700 witnesses, and concluded there in January that bankers, lawmakers, regulators, and irresponsible borrowers helped plunge the world economy into a financial panic. So again, we're gonna slap them on the wrist. Go, okay, banker, you learned your lesson now. Don't do it again. Then they tick you off. I mean, at the end of this, what happens? Is, you steal that candy bar, Jake, from that convenience store. You're going to jail. They got a steel cell for you with bars and bad singing and that stuff that happens in prison. Proctology exams and all of that stuff.
Well, that reminds me of proctology. Does the name Bernie Madoff ring a bell? I think you covered the story. If you didn't, the story of the governor from New Jersey attacking that 70-year-old state senator because she's double-dipping, even though one reason she still has to work was because her 401k, the manager put the money with guess who?
Bernie Madoff.
Yep. And that 401k magically disappeared.
It was magically delicious.
And the governor is jumping all over her about an example of, something that shouldn't exist. We shouldn't have people double-dipping in these bad economic times. Never mind the facts. Never mind the real culprits in this, Bernie Madoff and Wall Street. Let's blame the 76-year-old state senator, who, by the way, is pretty feisty. She came on TV and she really went after him.
He's a bully. He's nothing but a loudmouth bully.
Well, he said, why don't you take the bat to her, to the press, as if how dare the press call him on this? You talk about a bully.
He's a bully and a thug.
Oh, he is. He's a big man. I mean, he is a big man, and I think he probably was a bully in real life.
He's the kind of guy who needs a slap upside the head. Mother should have slapped him occasionally and probably made him a decent citizen. I mean, my grandfather always said, sometimes you need to give somebody a slap to make a citizen out of them. He's one of those guys who needs citizen lessons, if you will. Amazing stuff. But, yeah, the bankers are going to get away, so I just wanted to make sure that you knew that Miley's family was okay. That's what's important. Miley Cyrus is going to go on tour overseas, and everything is fine. Go back to your bowl of Cheetos and American Idol. Don't worry. Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Don't worry. It's all good. Stephanie emailed me last night. And again, if you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all of them personally, and I do use them on the show occasionally. Talking about what we talked about with Philip Matera about this concept of beggar thy neighbor economic development. This idea that, much like in the Carlisle area, they lost Carlisle Tire and Wheel down to Tennessee, because Tennessee, the state, was willing to give this company $34 million to shift their jobs, not create any jobs, just shift them. And we talked yesterday about American Greetings, you know, the people who bring you the greeting cards, getting $93.5 million from the state of Ohio at a time when Ohio is talking about stealing wages from workers and cutting education by $1 billion. Yeah, I mean, you stop and think about that. All that money we've shifted to private corporations. Well, she points out that in her area, she says EchoStar came here to McKeesport with a 10-year tax break. EchoStar is behind DirecTV, she says. They did create 800 jobs, but they didn't hire very many locals, which wasn't what they promised. She writes that they would hire local people, keep them for a short period of time, 6 months, for their probationary period, and then find a way to let them go. She points out that one of their practices was the teleworker on Friday, that we didn't need you anymore. Your service is no longer needed. Clean out your little cubicle and not come in on Monday. And then on Monday, when the worker didn't come in, they wrote him up as quit so they could fight their unemployment claim. You know, a good corporate citizen. You know, a good corporate citizen. She says as soon as the tax breaks ended, EchoStar decided to close the McKeesport office, saying that it was a cost-cutting move. So much for private sector job creation through tax breaks. I appreciate that, Stephanie, because, you know, these are the kind of stories that absolutely have to get out, and we see them all the time. This kind of stuff happens all the time. These companies, all it is it's a game. It's a shell game. How much can we steal from the taxpayers? And then we end up borrowing that money or taking it from vital programs, oh, I don't know, like education or, oh, I don't know, like roads and bridges. And then you got these Republican, all politicians, they all, you know, not just Republicans, there are a number of Democrats who are buying onto this tax cut train. Because nobody wants to be the bad guy and say, you know what, all that stuff you want, you need to pay for. You know, at the end of the party, the last guy in the room is the guy who ends up holding the check. He's the most unhappy guy at the party. You know, again, we want these things. We want education. We want decent infrastructure because in order to have a vibrant economy, you need to have infrastructure. We need public transportation. We need so many things. But yet these politicians keep saying, well, you know, more tax cuts. Tax cuts will help. Tax cuts will do it. We can cut all the taxes in the world. It's going to create jobs. And we'll have just rivers of honey and gold, and money will be flowing on us because tax cuts creates revenue. Other than the basic logic that seems to fail them on this, the fact that if your tax rates are less and you're bringing in less revenue, that you have less money to spend on the things that you need, just the basic rational thought process that would go into that whole equation, it's just dumb. And at the end of it, you know, they keep buying into it, Jake. They keep saying, oh, we know it worked in the 80s. No, it didn't. Stop. Stop rewriting the Reagan years. They weren't that great. I lived through them. In fact, they were marred by mostly recession and scandal. I mean, I don't know where this deity comes from, where this iconic figure known as the Reagan. He had one of the most corrupt administrations in the history of this country up until the little shrub.
And let's not forget Iran-Contra. Several of his people either were indicted or just narrowly escaped going to prison. Colonel Ollie North. He got off on a technicality, one of his right-hand men. You know, there are people now, 20 years later, say, hey, look, Bush Sr. certainly knew it, and Ronald Reagan, probably at that time was showing, and you know, I'm not mocking the guy, but he was showing signs of beginnings of Alzheimer's, which he eventually came up with. But, yes, most corrupt administration in the history of the country, up until that time. But the little Schwab's administration beat the Reagan administration as far as corruption and indictments.
Well, if you remember, William Casey, Reagan's CIA director?
Mm-hmm.
Mysteriously, the day he's going to go and basically spill the beans, he has a stroke that attacks the center of the speech center of his brain, kind of like a good old-fashioned, you know, chopping out of the tongue, if you will. You know how the mafia, you know, chop off the tongue, send it to you? This was that kind of thing.
That dare I say it? That sounds like something they would do in the Soviet Union. The KGB would get a hold of you.
Dare I say it? Well, yeah, you did.
I'm not saying the KGB did. I'm just saying it's KGB-like.
Mighty.
I want to clarify.
Mighty interesting. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We're right back after this with our author friend, Jane Latour, Sisters of the Brotherhood. We're back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on.
You know, one of the things I love, and I've been kind of following this a little bit. I happen to watch one of these. I'm a nut for C-SPAN. So not too long ago, they had this Phyllis Schlafly, whatever her name is, on with another woman. They co-wrote this book, basically saying that, you know, everything that the feminist movement did, was nonsense. It was no good. Capitalism would have brought us these things anyway. Women's rights would have happened, regardless of all the things that that those people say. And I find it interesting, this whole rewriting of history. This whole Tea Party thing, you look at the woman in Virginia, this Radke, who's running against George Allen, who said basically, you know, we don't need government. Women are doing fine. Women are doing just fine against men, making the same money. We're doing fine. We don't need unions. We don't need any of that stuff. I don't know what world they live in, but I'm sure it's not the one that I live in. Which is why then I found this book, Sisters in the Brotherhood, Working Women Organizing for Equality in New York. And I said, you know, let's have this woman come out and talk about her book from a woman's perspective. What's it like working in a man's world? Jane Latour, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rick. Nice to be talking to you.
I appreciate you taking time for us. You know, I look at this woman from Virginia who I'm not quite sure where she lives. Where men and women are equal paid and all of these, the wonderful things that she says would have happened anyway. What's it like in your world?
Yeah, well, you know, I just want to talk a little bit about what you were saying about where do they live? I mean, what kind of, what kind of mental landscape are they inhabiting? Certainly not the real world. And Phyllis Schlafly, who's still out there, promoting what she's calling reality, which is really, just invented, because she has been doing this for decades, and, you know, the irony of someone like Phyllis Schlafly, who's an attorney and is a professional woman, and exhorting women to, you know, play a woman's role, not, you know, talking about equality or in any way talking about real women's lives, working women's lives. It's just, you know, completely ironic.
Well,
but,
It's interesting to me on a number of levels, the hypocrisy that you get from these folks. I mean, you know, Schlafly being one of the people who early on, a very outspoken detractor of gay rights, turns out her son is gay, and now she doesn't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, well, I always remember, I used to work at UPS at night, you know, and she was out there talking about that women who were sexually harassed on the job were bringing it on themselves. And it was pretty funny because I started working at UPS. I worked there for 5 years in the winter. And it was a big, giant warehouse in Edison, New Jersey. And we were doing things like sorting packages, loading and unloading trucks. And there was no heat in the place. And we used to dress up in layers and layers. It was like the abdominal snowman, snow women. And, you know, who could tell what you were, what sex you were? You had so many damn clothes on. And it stuck in my mind because she was saying that women who were sexually violated on the job brought it on themselves. So
basically,
I thought that was
blame the victim mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I would wonder if she'd ever found herself in those situations.
You know, who knows? But the thing is that they have a whole theory. And they try to put that on, you know, they try to make their theory fit the facts, but they're not really, as people say, they're not really interested in facts.
Yeah, I think the Lily Ledbetter case is more accurate to what reality is for women in this country.
Yeah, and this is a woman who was working in a, you know, Goodyear and a non-traditional job. And the women who have, you know, What I like about Sisters in the Brotherhood is that it's a story about affirmative action. It's a story about the people who had the courage to, you know, the law changed and giving women the right to step into positions and places they had never visited before, never been allowed entree to before. And, you know, there's the law, and then there's the people who have the courage to make the law work for them to take advantage of it. It's like in civil rights when Brown versus Board of Education, and that was a Supreme Court case, but it took real families who had the courage to send their children to schools that, you know, prior to that were all white. And that took a lot of individual courage. And what I'm writing about in Sisters in the Brotherhoods, I take 24 women and I look at their lives, and I really wanted to show what is it like to be first and to go into a place where, you know, you're the newcomer, you're the outsider, and what is it like to try to learn a skilled job like, you know, electronics technician or a craft job in a telephone company or, you know, plumbing, electricity, carpentry, and learn this on a job where people are really basically not that welcoming. And it's not only are you learning something new and learning about a new culture, but you're encountering a lot of hostility.
Yeah, I've always had, you know, I drove a truck for years. I was a teamster for 21 years. Not very many women in the freight industry, but I got to be honest, I was always very impressed and really respectful of the few women that were there and gave them all of the credit in the world for putting up with the crap that they did.
Yeah, well, I actually have a teamster chapter. And it's called Women on the Move. And I also, in the induction to the book, I write about a woman, a Teamster sister. I was in local 177 Teamsters at UPS. And she was a short, very savvy woman, Evelyn Barnes. And we started a women's committee together because she educated me about why there were so few women in those trucks, in the big rigs, you know, the 18-wheelers. And what their experience was like. And what we did, we organized a women's committee, and we got our local to support the fact that we, you know, women had, they had the same issues as the men, and then they had additional issues. And those are the issues that are the kinds of things that lead women to leave the job. And, you know, that retention for a lot of these jobs is a problem. It's an issue. And so what I wanted to do with this book was sort of look at this history of, the whole movement of women into these jobs. And it's, you know, something that really we don't, the women are kind of invisible because there's so few of them. And I wanted to really explain, well, why is it that more than three decades after we have the civil rights law in Title VII, why are there still so few women in these jobs? And I wanted to really explore what was their experience on the job and in the unions.
What have you, over time, have you seen things that have gotten better? Because I can only imagine that 20, 30 years ago, things were much worse. Have things gotten better, or has it just been changed?
Well, it has gotten better. I think that people have really learned a lot. Certainly unions have learned a lot in terms of representing. A week ago tonight, we had a great experience in New York City. We had we were welcoming a woman who from the West Coast, from Washington State, she organized a group called Sisters in the Brotherhood. My book is Sisters in the Brotherhoods, but she has a group out there for tradeswomen, and her name is Melina Harrison. She was honored by Engineering News Record, a publication for, you know, engineering and construction, and she received an award in New York City. So we had a big event for her last Friday night, and it was so interesting to all of us in New York because not only did the sisters come out from all the different construction trades unions, but there were a lot of brothers there. And I met men from, you know, business agents from Local 28 and a lot of the different locals. And, you know, they've been really getting the message of why it's important to support the women. You know, they're first of all, they're union sisters. But I think they've gotten much more on the page in terms of understanding you know, what else at stake in terms of equality and just, you know, fair pay for workers. And so I think there is more support. But unfortunately, it's still the fact that because there are so few women, there's still a lot of harassment going on and a lot of denial of opportunity. And so those are still issues. And I think until, you know, it's not so uncommon to see women in these positions,
right,
that, you know, until we can do something to change the numbers, then I think there still will be all of these issues.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jane Latour. She's the author of Sisters in the Brotherhoods, Working Women Organizing for Equality in New York. You can copy that over at Powell's Books. We got a link at our site at therickssmithshow.com. Just click on Jane's name. It'll take you right there. I got to be honest. You know, I'm looking at all of these attacks that are going on against Title VII and all of these attacks that seem to be going on against women and their rights. And, you know, I look at it and I go, you know, as a man, would I really mind some of this craziness? Probably not. But for me, I've got two daughters.
Oh, right.
And I think about the world that they're coming into.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the stories that were in your book and a lot of the stories of women that I've talked to over the years, I don't want my daughters to have to fight those fights over and over again.
Absolutely. You know, one time I was at, I heard you had an announcement about Ask Me before, which I was thrilled because I work for Ask Me District Council 37 in New York City. I work for the union newspaper, Public Employee Press.
Oh, okay.
So I was really happy to hear that. But one night, one of the women's committee in one of our mini locals, we have 55 locals in the district council, and they asked me, could I get somebody to come and speak for Women's History Month at the district council. So invited Brenda Berkman, who's on the cover of my book, who is the person who sued the city of New York to open the doors, even though the law said that women had the right, you know, to equal rights to apply for jobs and all. It still wasn't happening in the fire department. So she was primarily responsible for that lawsuit. So she came to talk to one of our locals, and Local 375, which is like for engineers, planners, people who do those kinds of jobs, architects. And, you know, they really were kind of, you know, a wonderful audience for her. But when she was leaving, I decided to walk her out. And as I was walking her out, one of the officers from the local came up, and he said to her, "Thank you for what you and other women like you have done." He said, "My daughter just got accepted to the Coast Guard Academy." and she's going to go to the Coast Guard Academy, and it's because of women like you. And that's clearly the case, and I see that so much with men who have daughters, and they understand that they don't want their daughters going through this crap, and they also want their daughters to have, you know, all the opportunities that are available to women in whatever sphere they choose.
And that's why I think this book is important. Again, it's Sisters in the Brotherhoods, Working Women Organizing for Equality in New York. Again, you go to thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Jane Latour's name. It'll take you to the Powell's book site, and you can pick it up at a reasonably priced. Last question I have for you. Now, we're looking at all these attacks that are going on and this rewriting of history. What do you want people to think about as they see these attacks going on? What in your research really has grabbed you and said, you know, this is the moment?
Okay, well, I think this is, you know, one of the things that I really tried to show in my book. I wanted it to be like a recipe, a cookbook for activism. If you notice, every woman in my book is an organizer, an activist. She's been acting in some way to, you know, connect with other people and to do all that kind of very important and essential and difficult work of organizing for support, solidarity, and to make lives better for other working people. And I think that this was, of course, the early period when women were going into these jobs. I was writing about the 70s and the 80s. And then, of course, I have a chapter at the end where I connect to some of the young women to compare and contrast what's changed, what needs to change. But those young women, like their sisters before them, were also, the women in my book, were all organizers. And I think that's what, you know, I think is so essential, that we have to learn from, you know, all the organizing that's gone before us. You know, we have to look at our history and see what are the good examples to bring people together. And, you know, I think that, you know, my book is pretty critical of the role that the unions played in terms of the women and the representation of the women. But I think that, you know, we have to build a new labor movement. We have to build a much stronger and broader labor movement and bring those people who are outside inside.
Absolutely. And being critical is not being wanting to see it destroyed. You want to make it stronger, make it better.
Absolutely.
And that is the point. Again, Sisters in the Brotherhood, Working Women Organizing for Equality in New York. You can go to our website at thericksmithshow.com, click on Jane's name. The first person who emails me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, will get a copy of Jane's book. Jane, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Great book.
Thanks so much, Rick.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the Chambers of Commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. And I do think it's time for a change. You know, at some point, you got to look at what's going on in this country and realize that this isn't the direction we need to be going. In fact, there's a school in Detroit, this Katherine Ferguson High School, where the kids have said, you know what? We're going to sit our butts down and we're going to stay here for a week and until some of our demands are met with what's going on in the Detroit public school system. They want no school closings. They want to keep all Detroit schools public, no more charters or nonsensical privatization. They want to reinstate all programs and services that have been eliminated, including, like art and music, as well as counselors and social workers. They want student control of curriculum and student character as to assure that every Detroit school provides equal and quality education for all, and they also want no discipline or retaliation against any of the participants in the occupation. Evidently, there's a huge difference between what's going on right now in Detroit and what happened in Wisconsin. Because in Detroit, they booted everybody out, and evidently they're going to have a day in court. No civil disobedience in Michigan. You will be met with an iron fist. And, you know, maybe a beating or two on the way. Who knows? We're working on trying to get somebody from that area to talk to us about what's going on there now. You know, at some point, you know, we're going to have to fight these battles, I think. Because you look at what happened today, in Michigan. They've appointed one of these czars, to be the emergency financial manager of the city of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Basically what they did, the guy came in, he did, stripped all the city boards, all the commissioners, everything, all the city officials, all the government people, everything, no more authority, they're done. The czar has total control. Total control. That I don't remember being any part of the democratic process. And you look at yesterday, the emergency manager of Detroit's school system, he came in, set aside all the union contracts, gave all of the teachers layoff notices. They're all gone. Is this how we run a city? Is this how you're going to do things? And now you find out that Detroit is going to have to close its main public library, and it's going to have to close the majority of the neighborhood branches because there's no money. Because you don't have any tax base. Right now they're saying they've experienced an $11 million shortfall in revenue, so all 80 library employees gone. There are going to be more deep cuts. They're closing 18 of the 23 branches, and they plan on laying off 191 of the 333 employees. So they just canned 80, and 191 more could be not far behind. And what the union guy said, the AFSCME guy said, look, you know, we've already got a high enough illiteracy rate in this city. This is going to make things worse. And he blames the administrators for not properly, getting ahead of this. And now that you've got the czar going to step in. Who knows what happens from here, Jake? And this is what happens when you concentrate power into the hands of a very few. I'm so tired of hearing this. Well, you know, we need to cut because we got budget problems. No, we got revenue problems. We've absolutely got revenue problems.
And that has a negative multiplier effect. I mean, right now, with the economy being what it is and a lot of people out of work, they use the library. They come in and use, they use the online facilities to look for jobs. They read the papers. They look for the classifieds jobs available. And if that's not there, if they're going to close the library down, that's a very negative effect on the community. That when you close, when things are that bad that you're closing the library, and you think about that, things must be awfully bad out there. But to close them, that should be the absolute last thing you do.
So much for that Franklin guy I was talking about earlier. So much for his vision.
Benjamin.
Huh? Yeah, so much for Ben's vision.
I mean, what's the next thing? What are they going to go for next?
Well, I mean, we are going to go to a Wyatt Earp type. This is the conservative worldview. Understand, the conservative worldview is, I don't want to pay for anything that I don't get direct satisfaction, direct benefit
me,
from.
Me.
I don't want to help my neighbor. I could care less about him. It's all about me. It's very, very self-centric. So the idea here, and I've had this explained to me by a number of my conservative friends, and if there are any conservatives out there who see this differently, I would love to hear it. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. But this worldview of every service that I get, I should pay for. So if I want my street plowed, we should pay for that. If we want police protection, we should pay for that. If we want fire protection, we should have to pay for that. And it's this whole idea where, you know what, if I want to be off on my own and I don't want my fire protection because I think I can take care of that myself, then I don't have to pay for that. And the rest of the community can either pay more or suffer. This seems to be the world view. And it's not the world view that I espouse. But it's the difference between the George Bush cowboy vision of America or the John Glenn astronaut vision.
Well,
we're either this cowboy who can consume and consume and consume without regard for anybody else, and it's all about me and the heck with everybody else, or it's about we're part of a community. We're in a confined space where we need to work together and accomplish common goals. And there has to be a common good, and there have to be commons, which are public schools and libraries and police departments. Those are the views.
Might have worked, that idea of being this for lack of a better word, a violent individualist. Might have worked in the old days where, you know, when you rode a horse and most people lived on farms, lived in agriculture areas. There weren't cities. You didn't have the industrial development. You didn't have the modern world. But in the modern world, I think as a society, we have made a decision that the common good has to be taken care of. And I understand that the common good varies in certain parts of the country. But I think as a society, we have decided that there are certain basic things that are so important that everybody has to contribute towards those common goals. Now, the question remains, what are those common goals? But some of the conservatives would have you believe that there are very few, if any, common goals that they would necessarily have to be forced to participate in.
You know, here's the thing, and this is idyllic view of what the Wild West was. It wasn't that. What it was, it were people banding together, figuring out how to make communities, and for mutual protection, for mutual security. That's what the Wild West was. You had a few outliers, sure. You had your people moving around, but for the most part, people were trying to figure out how to do the things we all want: feed our children, make a decent living, have a reasonable life. That seems to be the common glue, I think, that holds people together. Yet, you know, you look at the budget that Ryan put forth. You look at the radical cuts and the deep, drastic, draconian cuts that our friends on the extreme right are trying to ram down our throats without any discussion. I mean, look at what Walker did in Wisconsin. There wasn't much discussion there. He said, I'm going to do it, and this is it, and you're going to like it. You're going to submit. And had it not been for those kids actually reading that and taking to the Capitol, it would have just gone through. Which is why which is why we need to stick together. We're going to take a break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin's governor admits a new union certification law saves no money. Jesse Russell reports.
On Thursday, the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Oversight and Government Reform held a hearing on state and municipal debt, tough choices ahead. They called on two governors with diametrically opposed management styles to testify, Governor Pat Shumlin from Vermont and Governor Scott Walker from Wisconsin. Walker received the brunt of the questioning as Democrats on the committee used his appearance as an opportunity to ask Walker about his proposals to limit collective bargaining for public sector employees. Ohio Representative Dennis Kucinich challenged Walker's assertion that the governor's proposals were necessary to balance the budget. Specifically, Kucinich asked Walker to clarify a proposal that requires employees to vote to recertify unions once per year.
How much money does it save, Governor? Just
that particular part doesn't save any.
Chris Marshall is helping to recall Wisconsin Republican State Senator Alberta Darling with a group that she co-founded called Mequon Moms Against Darling. She and the other upper-income suburban moms in Darling's district who are working for Darling's recall are disgusted by what they see as union busting that's tearing Wisconsin apart.
The defining factor for us is that it was just disgusting what has happened to the state of Wisconsin, as, you know, pitting neighbors against neighbors, family members against family members, and to somehow make the public sector employees, from school teachers to state employees, the bad guy in all of this, the ones who are causing all of this, the ones who just won't get on the train to fix it. When most of us in my group realized that if we all took, because we're in the upper income of the state, if we all took a 1.8 increase in our taxes, this budget hole would be closed.
Marshall says after the Republican senators are recalled, Governor Scott Walker is next.
This governor is unique in his inability to come into a dialogue, to compromise, to show any kind of diplomacy. And what he's done is torn apart the very soul of the state. And so for that reason alone, we need a change.
Workers and their allies are on the march this week around the country. In Michigan, thousands turned out to oppose Governor Rick Snyder's attacks on unions. In Washington State and California today, there will be rallies at state capitals protesting budget cuts that hurt public services while corporate tax breaks stay in place. And in Ohio, AFSCME, SEIU, firefighters, teachers, and the Democratic Party will rally in Columbus to repeal the anti-union law known as SB 5. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, you look at all these attacks going around the country. Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, New Hampshire, you go around the country, you're seeing all these attacks on workers' rights, you're seeing all this attacks on the middle class. In Ohio right now, the Attorney General there, Mike DeWine, has certified a summary language for a referendum seeking to repeal SB 5, the bill that's going to steal collective bargaining rights away from workers there in Ohio. I think this is a good thing. I think it's going to mobilize the people of Ohio, and I'm hoping this kind of mobilization happens across the country. I've been calling for it here in Pennsylvania for some time. I'm saying, you know, the only way we're going to fight this back is if we take to the Capitol, we sit and we have them drag us out. Which tonight, I guess, from what I'm being told, what's going on in Michigan is that the students at Katherine Ferguson Academy there in Detroit have taken to their school for a sit-in. They've got a list of demands that I think are pretty rational. The police and the school district, I guess, had different ideas. So let's talk to a couple of people who are there. Tiffany, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Tell me, what's going on in Michigan right now?
A lot is going on in Michigan right now, like a lot, and not good things either. What we were protesting today, or what the city was about today, was they're shutting down a lot of public schools and trying to put a lot of charter schools in place. And public education is our right. Like, that is our right. In the school we were at specifically, I graduated from last year, and I attended that school, and it was a tremendous help to me. It was a tremendous help to all of my peers. It's a tremendous help to the community, and we were there fighting for it.
So tell me, what did you do? What set you into action tonight? Tell me what you've done, and tell me what set it into motion.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Tell me what you guys are doing right now, what happened tonight, and why. What set you into motion on this night?
This night, well, we've been planning the sit-in for about a week and a half, and we had like a lot of meetings trying to discuss like when we would do the occupation, and Friday was the beginning of spring break, and we decided that we would occupy the school starting Friday, and then we'd stay there however long it took. Like, we were prepared to stay for the whole spring break, like the weekend, next week. We had food. There was like tremendous community support. People were passing us food through the windows. We had sleeping bags. My daughter was with me. One of my friends had her son with her.
So what time did you start this occupation, and what time did they throw you out?
We started the occupation at about, we got to the school at about 1. We did a press release at around 3. And between, I think, like, I don't know, the last time I looked, before I was arrested, the last time I looked at the clock, it was like 6:04. But then, like, once I got the handcuffs off, it was around 8:20, something like that.
So literally put handcuffs on you and took you away?
Yes.
So what's
going to... We barricaded ourselves in library, and they broke in and they arrested us one by one.
Like stormtroopers. So what's going to happen now? What are you facing now?
Now we got like a misdemeanor for trespassing, but that's being taken care of, and we're gonna meet and discuss further action.
Let me ask you this last question I've got for you. Is this your first action? I mean, is this your first, kind of protest, first civil disobedience? Is this your first act?
Yes, it is.
This is what we need. We need more folks like you, Tiffany. I appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's go to line 2. We got Nicole on line 2. Nicole, thanks for taking time for us tonight.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you.
What's going on?
I was with Tiffany, and, you know, it just made clear that the face of the new Jim Crow is the same as the face of the old Jim Crow, that students were brutally removed by the police for defending their school, for themselves, for their children, for all young people of Detroit. It was a beautiful, peaceful community protest. Like Tiffany said, we had supporters bringing us food. We were doing art with the kids. I mean, the students were making great speeches on loudspeakers out to the crowd. We had a documentary film that was going, which the police took.
Which they confiscated and made sure there's no evidence of them, acting like stormtroopers. Let me ask you, how many people were inside?
There are about 20 people outside. It was difficult to count.
No, inside, with you in the occupation.
Inside, I'm sorry, yes, inside.
So you had about 20 folks there, and all of them got arrested?
All of the people that were inside, yeah, were taken to the station, yes.
And were you one of them?
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, have you ever been a part of a protest like this before? I mean, is this something you do, or is this your first action?
This is my first action of, you know, civil disobedience, like getting arrested. I've done marches and other things before. This is the first thing.
So it's... I'll ask the same question I asked Tiffany. You know, what was it that made this this time that made you folks spring into action? What was the final straw?
Well, we just, you know, Detroit schools have been under attack for 10 years, and, you know, we just can't keep letting them close school after school after school. This is the second year in a row that CSA was on the list. We've had, what, I think 50 schools closed at least in the last 2 years. They're slating to close another 70 more over the next 2 years, and we just cannot let our young people be sold off for the profit of a few people. And, you know, and I just want to say before I do, the police were very brutal with, you know, small young women and choking people and pinching, you know, slamming people and dragging people, and everything we had going inside was filmed by a filmmaker, and the police confiscated the camera, and we demand that the camera be returned to the filmmaker with the tape in it. Yes, it was I think it was originally returned to her. She's a professional filmmaker. This is her work. You know, she was leading with, I'm like, this is what I need for my work. I can't do my job without my camera. And I think DPD had actually given it back to her, and then DPS police took it away and said, no, you can't have it.
So let me ask you, are you going through the same things in Michigan that we're going through here in Pennsylvania, this bizarre voucher lottery system that they want to set up? Do you have vouchers?
No, we don't really have vouchers in Michigan. It's different here. It's just charterization. They're selling off to all of our schools to charter schools in Detroit, converting them over to charter schools. They're trying to end public education in Detroit. This is a New Orleans plan for Detroit without a hurricane. I mean, literally end public education. No more public schools. They're, you know, just a handful of very, very unfunded, you know, schools. We have all our specialized schools are being closed. Specialized programs are being shut down. Schools like ours, you know, that's for pregnant parents, you know, and we're the only one left, are shut down. A day school for the deaf, that's the only one, like, in southeastern Michigan. They're going to close it. I think they're really trying to turn us back to the days where, you know, children with special needs were just stayed at home or were sent away, you know, from middle-class families or families that could scrape enough together to send them away. If you get pregnant, you're just done with school, you know. It's just horrifying what they're trying to do. And so
we've been organizing
with the coalition FAM here, By Any Means Necessary, in Detroit, and we've been saying this for a while and saying, you know, what we need in Detroit is an integrated metro-wide school district to bring real equality to our public education system.
So, again, please keep us...
And it's
going
to take a mass movement to do this, so that's what we're trying to build. You know, what happened today, I think, was just... As one supporter outside told me today, was the tip of the iceberg, that we need a mass movement of action.
Which is why we've reached out to bring your story here to our area, because I firmly believe what happened in Wisconsin, what's going on in Michigan right now, has to happen all across this country.
If we
don't want to see the entire 20th century repealed and end up back in the 1880s and 1890s.
Yep. They're also, you know, taking away art and music and just stripping it down to the bare bones of education here. You know, not just trying to say, you know, the young people of Detroit they don't want to pay for the young people of Detroit. They've decided that they've given out pink slips to every employee, all teachers, all counselors, all support staff, all secretaries. Everyone's gotten pink slips in the entire district.
That's because they think they can hire minimum wage teachers. That's what that's about.
And they think that our kids don't deserve, you know, a stable education system.
It's the attack that's going on right now. It's why we've got to stand together. Nicole, I appreciate your time. Please keep us informed of what's going on, if you would.
Thank you.
Again, you know, you look at this, and I'm telling you, these are the kind of things we need to know are going on. And I'll bet you you're not going to see this in the mainstream corporate-controlled media. I'm betting on that. I'm betting this is going to be one of the only places you hear this story. Because what's going on is they don't want you to know that there's activism going on. They don't want you to know that people are occupying their schools and occupying their capitals, because it might plant the seed.
And isn't it amazing, again, Rick, just like in Wisconsin, the young adults are leading the way. You know, it takes a lot of guts what they're doing.
Well, it's got to be them. It's their future. It has got to be them. It is their future. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What's it going to take to get you into the street? How bad does it have to get? We're back after this.
Listening to the Rick Smith Show.
An email popped up recently that chilled me to the bone. Just one sentence long, it said, "Occasionally Kansas legislators make Texas legislators look like sages." Friends, if that's true, America is in a heap of hurt. For years, I've lived with, dealt with, and reported on the insane asylum that Molly Ivins dubbed the Texas Ledge, goofier than which I thought you could not get. In just the past couple of months, for example, I reported to you that two towering figures in our ledge had been routinely double billing on travel expenses for luxury hotels, fancy restaurants, and such. In the midst of an ongoing budget crunch, they were illegally collecting tens of thousands of dollars from Texas taxpayers, even as they were demanding that programs to help poor people be slashed. When caught, these goobers essentially said, "Well, gosh, no one told us it was wrong." Now that sets a high bar for low IQ, doesn't it? And I thought it would also establish a low mark for bottom feeder ethics. However, my Kansas correspondent found a lawmaker in his legislature who is a legitimate contender to top our duo. Virgil Peck is the name. A state rep, he sits on a committee that was recently considering ways to deal with the spreading wild boar problem. It was suggested that the solution might be to put sharpshooters in helicopters to thin the roving herds. That sparked a synapse between Virgil's two brain cells, and next thing you know, his tongue was moving, and these words gushed out of his mouth. "Looks like to me, if shooting these immigrating feral hogs works, maybe we have found a solution to our illegal immigration problem." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Ooh, boy, that's Texas-class doofusness, all right. Maybe we need to have a national state-ledge worst-off. Send your nominees to me, info@jimhightower.com.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
You know, good for them. Good for the folks there in Michigan. And that's what it's going to take. A small number of people, standing up, or in this case, sitting down and saying, we're going to stake our ground here. We're going to draw the line here, no more. And it's going to take a lot of this kind of stuff, a lot of involvement. The mass protests are nice. It's nice to have 150,000 people show up to the Capitol. It's great. But it's all of the little things as well. Having four or five people go to your state rep's office, having four or five people stand on the street corner and be noticed. And Julianne Shepherd over at Alternate wrote an interesting little piece that says, things that are happening and five ways to jump in and get involved is the piece. And some of the things that she suggests, I'm in with. We've been they're good starting ideas, like this U.S. uncut thing that's going on. We've got 12 multinational corporations who have spent $1 billion lobbying our government. $1 billion in the last 10 years lobbying for laws that benefit them. Instead of that $1 billion benefiting us through them paying their fair share of taxes, They have spent that money getting out of it. So this U.S. Uncut group is saying, look, no more cuts, no spending cuts, no education cuts, no cuts until these tax cheats pay up. And they've got actions all weekend long, the 15th through the 18th. And I think, you know, you can go over, and I think we'll get a link up at our site if we can, to the list of events, because I think, you know, these are opportunities to get involved and to meet other people you may agree with. Move On, for instance, is doing these rolling fasts. You've got more than 30,000 people who have said, you know what? We're going to fast. You got 28 members of Congress, who are saying that, you know, they're going to fast for a while, to draw attention. Some of the other things that are going on, the progressive pranking, the story about GE the other day by the Yes Men, a number of these things have got to happen to draw attention. And, you know, one of the biggest things is let your money do the talking. Only support people who support you. You know, if there's a progressive business out there who's going to take a stand like they're doing in Madison, saying we stand with these workers. Those are the people you support. For me, anybody who would advertise on Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck, those are people who are not on our side. And really the biggest thing, I think, and it goes back to this, the website that I talked about at the beginning, remappingdebate.org. Figure out what your taxes are. Find out how much you're paying in taxes. Compared to how much the ultra wealthy are paying. And ask yourself, are they paying their fair share? That's where I think all of this stuff has to begin, Jake. This is where it has to begin. Small groups of people doing things that get attention and draw other small groups of people together. It's basic organizing.
It's been done before. Some classic changes in their society, but I agree with you. At some level, there has to be a reaction from bottom up. Has to be a bottom-up revolution.
And next week we're going to be talking to a guy from this group, movetoamend.org. They're one of the groups out there saying, you know, this Citizens United thing has got to stop. And their proclamation is, quote, we, the people of the United States of America, reject the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Citizens United and move to amend our Constitution to, one, firmly establish that money is not speech, that human beings, not corporations, are persons entitled to constitutional rights. Two, guarantee the right to vote and to participate and to have our vote and participation counted. You look at what's going on in Wisconsin right now, some hanky things going on. We need to have though that oversight, and I think it's happening. The other thing they want is to protect local communities, their economies, and democracies against illegitimate preemption actions by global, multinational, and state governments. Look, the Supreme Court, in what they're saying, is misguided in the principle and wrong on the law. In a democracy, people rule. So when we talk to Ben Mansky next week about this, this is one of those opportunities to say, you know what, here's something we can do. Here's a direction that we can pursue constitutionally that I think is a smart start. Take money out of this game. Now, I'm someone who, you know, I think a constitutional amendment, making sure that people are people and corporations are corporations, something I think we absolutely need. What I think we don't need are term limits. And one of these crazy groups, U.S. Term Limits LLC, they're thrilled that Pat Toomey and Jim DeMint have signed on to this this idea that they want to introduce an amendment to the Constitution that would set term limits, and their term limits are two 6-year terms for senators and 3 2-year terms for House members. And they claim, according to a fake news at Fox poll, that 78% of America agree with it. So they're saying, you know, they want this constitutional amendment. What I find amazing, again, you go back to these are the people who are supposed to be so in love with the Constitution and so in love with the founders. And, you know, these are those people, you know, original intent. If you understand the original intent, was against term limits. And, in fact, the Supreme Court back in the 90s ruled that term limits were unconstitutional. But that's not going to stop the true believers. No, no. If you don't like what the Constitution you cherish says, change it. And I point back to the Federalist Paper 53, because I, unlike most of them, have actually read the Federalist Papers. James Madison wrote why you don't want term limits. He said a few of the members of Congress will possess superior talents. Those are the people we want to keep. Will by frequent re-elections become members of long-standing, will be thorough masters of the public business, and perhaps not unwilling to avail themselves to those advantages. The greater the proportion of new members of Congress, and the less the information of the bulk of the new members, the more apt they'd be to fall into the snares that may be laid before them. Now, stop and think about this for a second. Understand the Articles of Confederation were extremely weak. And it did restrict congressional service to 3 terms. Understand that, and this is what I've been saying from the beginning. If we decide to have these term limits, lobbyists are going to write even more of our bills because they're going to be the experts in it. You know, it takes a while just to find out where the John is. Half these guys barely probably found their office and don't know where the staplers are. And we're going to replace them? You know, at the end of the day, we seem to have this love of, you know, of the founders. You know, there's James Madison and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and John Quincy Adams and all these people who were what? Oh, yeah, career politicians. But we never seem to talk about that. You know, had we had term limits, had we got all those people out of Congress, chances are some of those names wouldn't be there. Anyway.
Well, if you noticed in the 90s, right? There was this outcry from the Republicans when they were out of power that, yes, we need to reform the system, and one of the ways is to term limits. You have to have term limits. The Congress isn't what it should be. Well, isn't it amazing when they got in power and all of a sudden that talking stopped? They never pushed it. Haven't pushed it since. Every now and then you have somebody coming out for it, but I guess it depends whose ox is being gored.
Yeah, no, I guess it is. In the presidential run, Tricky Ricky Santorum is back. Turns out, though, that he was asked about his slogan, you know, fighting to make America America again. That is actually part of a Labor poem by a gay activist. Well, he was asked if that was the case, if he decided to steal that line from the gay activist. And, of course, Tricky Ricky said, well, I didn't know. I'm not a part of that. So I guess he has delegated the main slogan of his campaign to someone else. I gotta wonder what kind of president he's going to be then if the main theme of his entire campaign, fighting to make America America again. You know, that's his tagline. He farmed it out to somebody else. I mean, come on, really? Anyway, the lead has changed, and the Donald has taken over with 26% of the vote over Huckabee's 17%. The Mitzi has 15. The wife cheater, Gingrich, 11. Palin, the governor quitter, has 8. And Ron Paul, 5. And Pawlenty and Bachman, 4 apiece, according to the PPP poll. Again, you know, the Donald, who nobody really thinks he's being serious. Personally, I think he's just a guy who's looking for more attention because he's an egomaniac.
Well,
and good for him.
Did you hear his latest crazy?
He's not racist.
No. I'm stunned that he said it. He said, Barack Obama is the worst president in the history of the United States. He said he used to think it was Jimmy Carter, but now it's Barack Obama. I mean, boy, I mean, he not only is over there on the right, he fell off the end.
No. I disagree with you. He's talking for that person in the investor class who did very well. He's talking from the perspective of, hey, I got a boatload of cash, a big handout, a big fat windfall from the little shrub. I got to fill my pockets. My world was fantastic. I don't give a rat's behind about those soldiers who died. Could care less about those crummy towers. Could care less about the country crumbling. Could care less about the state of education. I got mine. That's the perspective. We're back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. Back after this.
America. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weekend, The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. And now about what's going on in Washington, D.C., Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you.
So what's going on in town tonight?
Well, actually, town is clearing out after a pretty long week. Senate cleared out yesterday. House cleared out later today after they passed the resolution. This is the resolution, which is the broad brush outlines of the budget for 2012, which begins in actually on October 1st. There were four amendments, and one was the Congressional Black Caucus. That went down 303 to 103. Then there was the Progressive Caucus, the Congressional Progressive Caucus. That went down 347 to 77.
Wow.
Then there was a very interesting vote, and there was so much raucous that when I heard it, I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm listening to what's going on in England on a Sunday night. You listen to C-SPAN, and you see Prime Minister's questions.
Yep.
There was all this loud booing and whatever. The point is that the Republican Study Committee, which is a very right-wing part of the Republican Party, put their own amendment to this, and originally the Democrats voted with the more moderate Republicans against it. But then, realizing that they could really sort of point out where the Republicans really were on this, they changed their votes to present. So 119 of essentially this Tea Party types voted for the amendment, 136 Republicans voted against it, and then 172 actually voted present. And then there was a Democratic sort of mainstream alternative, and that went down pretty much around party lines, 259, not totally, and 166. And then the final budget resolution, which was essentially Paul Ryan from Wisconsin's budget, passed 235 to 193.
Now I watched the ruckus, and I, you know, as I'm sitting there watching it, I said, you know, it's about time Democrats got smart.
Right. Well, I think they did get smart, and they got smart on this issue of actually saying that present, and they're not going to vote for it. Very
yeah.
smart tactic, actually.
This way, give the people what they want, or what the Republicans think they want.
That's right. And then, of course, there was all this trouble in the galleries, and that was from a protest that was going on outside the Capitol that came inside the Capitol on the D.C. taxation without representation vote.
Yeah, there's another situation. The mayor and the city council getting arrested. I guess I'd be angry too if all my funding was cut.
Right, and if they're saying, you know, what you can do with abortion and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, the Republicans love to talk about freedom and they love to talk about liberty. I guess it's their own freedom. They don't really care about yours.
Exactly, and it's interesting. I mean, they're the ones that are going on about internet freedom, et cetera, and then on the back pocket, they're taking money from the lobbyists to try and make sure that only certain companies get certain kind of speed access.
Well, they are the corporate party, after all.
They are the corporate party. That is absolutely true. So it was a crazy day. I'm glad you were able to see some of our insanity that we've been putting up with.
It's fun to watch. I mean, it was almost like a circus today. So what are our Gang of Six up to now?
Well, the Gang of Six, they have actually been meeting for a couple of months. But the White House is now saying, look, with this bill basically dead on arrival in the Senate, you now have to really help us put together something. And I think that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to try and put together something as soon as possible. They have basically 2 weeks now that they are on recess. And then they will come back, and then the president is expected to meet with them and say, look, pull this together, Gang of Six. Now, Conrad has threatened to walk out, but so far he's still in there.
All right. And some news from Gitmo?
Some news from Gitmo, yes. President actually signed the bill that authorizes the Defense Department through September 30th. And this is a special defense authorization bill. It's essentially a continuing resolution that was separate. And he issued, you know, Bush issued about 700 what's called signing statements, essentially saying how he would interpret the bill. And the president basically issued a signing statement on this, saying that he does not approve of not having people from Gitmo leave for trials, but that he is going to try and work with Congress to do that. However, he did not want to impede the spending of the bill, and so he is signing it.
That's an interesting question. How many of these signing statements has this president? Because I used to go nuts every time Bush would add his own interpretation, which sometimes were really just bizarre, off-the-wall interpretations.
I don't think too many. I don't have the exact number, but it's, Bush apparently issued more than any other president, I think, all together.
Right, all of the presidents throughout history together combined, he did more himself, right. And I was just curious where Obama stood on that, because I haven't heard a lot. This is probably one of the two or three that I've heard of, so.
Actually, if you go on to the, I just put in, as I was speaking to you, Bush signing Obama signing statements, and let's see, I'm getting up to 10, 11, 15, about 18 or 19 since he's been president.
Oh, interesting. And what's going on with the president next week? What's on the agenda?
Well, he's going to have three town halls. One of them he's going to be, I believe, either in Maryland or Virginia, right around Washington. And then he's going to be going out and doing one at Facebook at their corporate headquarters and then doing one in Nevada. So this is going to be town hall week. He knows that members of Congress are in the district, and he's going to try and take up some of the air by doing that.
And I hear we're going to have another Republican entering the fray here in 2012?
That's right. Gary Johnson was a fiscal conservative governor of New Mexico, but socially pretty liberal, and you know, gay marriage, et cetera. And he, it looks like he's going to be entering the fray on Thursday.
What's the point?
You know, they're all in it. Some people, like a lot of people, believe, as I believe, that Trump knows he's not going to go anywhere. But it certainly increases his brand. Why not?
Well, I understand why Trump's doing it. He's a narcissist, and it's all about him, and it's going to help him make more money. But this guy, why? There are very few socially liberal folks left in the Republican Party.
There are. It has moved. The Rockefeller Republicans are no longer.
Yeah, there are no more Rupan Republicans.
I mean, I never thought when I was 12 or 13 years old, and I would walk home from junior high school, and Goldwater was running for president, and there was the Goldwater. They had an entire house where I lived, and that was sort of their headquarters. And I would just, you know, I'd be horrified. But who's ever think that you would be mourning for the Goldwater Republicans?
Well, who, you know, I have a friend who Mrs. Nixon. So, you know, think about that one.
Wow.
That's how far they've gone. Ellen Ratner, have a great weekend. I appreciate your time. We'll see you next week.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. And what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, we've been talking about, the irony is, we talked about the situation in Michigan with those students kind of revolting against closing schools. We have some closing of schools right here in Dauphin County, Upper Dauphin School District. Not only closing of schools, but laying off of teachers. The Upper Dauphin School Board agreed this week to furlough 7 teachers for the 2011-2012 year due to budget constraints. According to the superintendent, furloughed employees include a librarian, secondary guidance counselor, and secondary language arts, French, music, and elementary level teachers. The district expects to save around $446,000 from the furloughs, but still faces a budget deficit of more than $400,000. The district must finalize a budget before July 1st. An earlier round of furloughs eliminated the high school, middle school assistant principal, the district's facility manager, and two aides for next year. And next in line could very well be some closing of schools. Tax relief from the slots play to lower 2011-2012 school property tax bills for an average of about $200. Homeowners will see about a $200 reduction on average in their school property taxes this year in the state's fourth distribution of slots-funded tax relief. Budget Secretary Charles Zogby certified that $276 million in gaming revenue will be available for property tax release this year. Of that, $612 million will be directed to property or wage tax relief, and the remaining $164 million will go into the state's property tax and rent rebate program for seniors and disabled individuals. Amounts of tax relief vary by school districts. Those amounts will be posted early next month on a State Department of Education website. The $612 million available for property tax relief is down slightly from last year's $616 million. Zogby attributed that to delays in casino openings and continued increases in non-taxable promotional play at casinos. When former Governor Ed Rendell signed the slots law way back in 2004, he promised it would produce about $1 billion in property tax relief in 2012-13. He later said that figure assumed all 14 casinos are up and operating at this point, only about 10. So for income per casino, I think he was fairly close. The problem is, of the 14 projected casinos to be operating by this year, only 10 are. We talked about, you touched on a little bit, Rick, the situation in SB, the bill in Ohio that was passed by the Ohio legislature, signed by Kasich, which would eliminate collective bargaining rights for about 350,000 public employees. According to the law, what you can do in Ohio, if you get enough signatures, and by that I mean they have to get, those who want to get it on the ballot have to get about 231,000 signatures by June 30th, and what happens at that point? If they get enough signatures to get it on the ballot, the law at that point cannot go into effect until the result of the November election. It will then go on the ballot, and the people of the state will decide. And I think they have a real chance to repeal that. I hope for their sake they, in fact, do. New Mexico. We haven't heard a lot coming out of that state. Every now and then you hear a little bit, but for the most part it's been quiet. Well, even that state, they have a very conservative Tea Party governor. I know you're shaking your head. I know we heard a little bit of it. But a unanimous New Mexico State Supreme Court said Wednesday that the Tea Party Republican governor, Susana Martinez, overstepped her authority when earlier this year she fired two members and the executive director of the Public Employers Labor Relations Board. New Mexican Federation of Labor filed suit against her action. The court ordered Martinez to reinstate the two fired board members. Three-person labor board enforces the state's public employee collective bargaining law and consists of one member chosen by state employee union, one member chosen by the state department heads, and one member chosen by two other members. Although the governor makes the final appointment, the selection process is performed by the union's management and the board themselves. The board also chooses an executive director. It's not clear what will happen with the executive director's position. The board could rehire the former director or choose another director. The court agreed with arguments by Shane Yutz, who represented the New Mexican Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, that the board should maintain independence from the executive branch because by its very nature it decides cases involving the executive branch. Yutz told the justices that of 43 cases pending before the board at the time of the firing, 17 directly involved the governor. Therefore, it should be independent. It's my report, Rick.
We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Cut all their hours by Washington decree. So here I stand with a long line of cars, everyone yelling at me. When did I become the problem? How did the fall become online? The president says, I'm tightening the belt. The only one to tighten is mine.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make things happen!
That old washer dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Kleins Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Kleins, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Kleins Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Kleins Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Kleins Appliances Repair Service.
Okay. Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Yeah. I would love to see Michelle Bachmann become the Republican nominee, because I am. I'm crazy for that crazy chick. I know, sexist, but even still, there you go. A Maine man has pled guilty to federal charges. Evidently, he decided that that he was going to threaten to rape, torture, and kill the hosts of NPR's All Things Considered, which is kind of weird because it's a man and a woman team there. So he, John Crosby was going to rape and murder and torture and kill these folks because he didn't like what they were saying. He pled guilty. He could face 10 years in prison, $250,000 fine when he's sentenced. Again, you kind of go, really? Something someone said on the radio?
I've listened to that show. It's kind of lighthearted.
It's kind of boring. What could possibly have made you want to kill one of them?
Because they're on NPR.
I mean, I can understand wanting to kill yourself for having to listen to it, but not them. I don't know. Anyway, in baseball news, one of your favorite people, Lenny Dykstra, is back in trouble again.
Oh, Lenny.
Evidently, cheating a hooker out of pay wasn't bad enough. Wasn't he in trouble for that?
Well, he was in trouble for something more serious than that. It involved, I believe it involved investing other people's money.
Well, there's some of that.
Not necessarily the legal way.
He has filed bankruptcy, and then he decided he was going to sell and destroy and do some other stuff to the stuff that he wasn't supposed to touch. So he has been charged. He has been charged with some grand theft. So he's held on $500,000 bail.
And he was a fan favorite.
Yeah, he was. And now he's going to be a prison favorite.
Well, he was also one where there was accusations of steroids.
Oh, well.
He showed up one year about 30 pounds heavier, and it was all muscle. You make the call.
I'm not making a call. He's going to be very popular in prison. Good luck in prison. It's a good thing it's California and not... not South Carolina. It's a good thing he's going to prison probably in Berkeley, California, instead of Berkeley County Detention Center in South Carolina. Because in South Carolina, evidently the sheriff only lets prisoners read one book. That's all you can read. Got to read the Bible. No magazines, no nothing. The Bible.
Are you serious?
That's it.
Oh, my.
That's all you can have. Got to read the Bible. You're in prison. You got to suffer. I guess that's the message. Kind of a weird, again, South Carolina.
Don't train them. Don't give them a job. So when they get out in society, they can't fend for themselves. So they turn to crime. Real smart.
Well, that's a very Christian thing to do, though.
Real smart.
Very Christian. Because you need to be that constant reminder. Funny story here. Not funny. Haha. Kind of funny. Ironic. Kind of bizarre. A guy here in Harrisburg was on trial yesterday for evidently for beating up his girlfriend. So he's on trial for threatening his girlfriend, and I guess he beat her and whatever. So she testifies against him. Evidently they find him not guilty. So he's beat the rap, so to speak. So on the way out of the courthouse, he beats the crap out of her on the steps of the courthouse.
I saw that story and I thought, I'd bring it in, but I thought, no, that's too crazy. I mean, what do you say to someone like that? He's definitely prime candidate for appearing on that national syndicated show.
What?
Dumbest criminals. And there is a show, I'm telling you, dumbest criminals. I mean, wow.
Amazing stuff. You know,
not too bright.
You got to laugh at some of this stuff, though. I mean, it's almost so insane that it can't be true. But I don't doubt it. I've got to the point where I just don't doubt people anymore. Especially since you look at what's going on in Arizona. Arizona has its Blur law, and I guess if you intend to run for president there in Arizona, you don't have to have the required birth certificate because they're going to take some other things. They're going to take some other things as proof, which according to the story, and I'm just reading the story, before passing their so-called birther law bill Wednesday, Arizona Republicans apparently decided it went too far to limit this proof. So what they want to do is limit to this long form birth certificate, and they realize that, gee, we don't have all of those documents ourselves, so we should open it up to other things. So they opened it up to baptismal records, and I can't make this up. A certificate of circumcision. I can't make this up. I absolutely can't. Which is given to Jewish parents of a male child after the foreskin snipped. I mean, when we had kids, they didn't give us a certificate, but I guess the people of Jewish faith, they get a certificate. And evidently, that is good enough in Arizona to go along with their...
The birth certificate, is it?
I can't make that up. I mean, folks, if you live in Arizona, leave. There are too many crazy people there. And the sad thing is you got this nitwit over here, this corporate tool, Metcalf, who wants to bring that same kind of ridiculous nonsense here to Pennsylvania. I have no idea how that guy wins time and time again in his district. They just must have a bunch of mush brains walking around there. It must be something in the water. I'm not getting it.
No, he's been there for a while.
Insanity.
No term limits for him.
Insanity. Anyway, evidently the trademark, application for Sarah, K. Sarah, Sarah, Quitter Governor Palin and her daughter Bristol, going right along nicely. They are going to be able to legally trademark their name. So I'm not sure how this is going to work. If in the future we're not going to be allowed to say the name without paying revenues, will we just have to call her Quitter? And, wedlock mother? I don't know. Not quite sure. Gonna have to check with our legal team on that, but, they're...
Our crack legal team, by the way.
We got one of the best in the country.
Yes, we do.
Our good friend Irwin is one of the best lawyers in the country. But we're gonna have to find out where this is gonna stand. Can we call them, Sarah? Or am I gonna have to say K. Sarah, Sarah? And you'll just have to know what I mean. I'm not quite sure. You think of all the money that the Candy Foundation gave to Bristol, $262,000 for being an advocate for abstinence-only education. The girl who got pregnant at 17. Abstinence-only education. Am I the only one who thinks that's kind of weird?
No, that's very ironic.
Probably weird. But they paid her almost all of the money they took in, almost every penny of it, just to take her name, which now will be trademarked. And the good thing, I guess, about trademarking her name, I would guess any income that comes in is corporate income because now she's a corporation. She's been trademarked. So maybe her tax, that's an interesting question. We're going to have to get a tax attorney on that. You leave it to the wealthy. They'll figure it out.
She learned from her mother how to make money.
They will figure it out. Anyway, today back in 1912, jumping around the map a little bit, was the day that the British luxury liner, the Titanic, sunk in North Atlantic off of Newfoundland, and 1,500 people died. Sunk in 3 hours. Also today back in 1986 is the day we began bombing Libya. So kind of weird how things go along. Anyway, thanks for everyone being here tonight, and thanks to the folks in Michigan for getting in touch with us. It's great to be able to break those kind of stories and bring them to the airwaves. Not that the mainstream corporate controlled media will. That's why we are here. But thanks to our guests who are here tonight. Thanks to Brett, the guy who keeps everything sounding great, and the knobs and the tubes and everything, and answering the phones. And again, thank you. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, you can go to therichsmithshow.com and download our podcast. If you want to contact me, Rick at therichsmithshow.com. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at therichsmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therichsmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's common at the time of flood beneath the Lunar Sway Imperium.
Thanks to John Fox and Ben Birch for all that they do. Because all that they do is make sure that all this gets out to you. And many thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. It's a hell of a fight they're in. A hell of a struggle. And they never get winded. And they never say, I can't. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.